Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance whenever we're able. We'll routine to call a scene to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more mid-able. The many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're off from mad in Camelot. We sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Ma'am, sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh. Come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway! Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about! Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
For your transgression, you receive the atomic boot to the ass!
Thud!
Oh boy, that sounded bad.
I've fallen and I can't get up!
Oh, king to fill the terrible and the knights of the round table.
Something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street, singing songs and a carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop now, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop, children, what's that sound?
Says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, a woman and the kids and the dogs and me. Got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. From the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. Of the Broadway night, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. And we can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Good morning, everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table. Been doing the encoder shuffle this morning, trying to get which one's going on and which one ain't going on. We got so many networks out there that we're trying to broadcast and restream and so on down the line. So far, ain't none of my knights called in just yet, so if anyone out there would like to call in, that'd be the time to do it. Just call in Shaziz at, on Skype there. Just add me as a contact if you ain't already done it. So, with that said, alrighty then. You're listening to No Borders Radio, Wake Radio, Shaziz Radio, We Roar Radio, and many other networks that are rebroadcasting the stream of the Knights of the Round Table. I forgot to do something here, so I'm going to throw on a tune real quick, and hopefully I find a good one real fast. Do-do-do-do-do.
Happy
how's it going, Muddy?
Oh, having a ball as usual. Got a big old pot of tea over there. Well, it's not big anymore. I think I got one more cup left in it. Then I'm going to coffee.
Well,
the sun came out yesterday, and it's out again today. I'm a little excited. I'm going to get a few things done. Got all that rain and crap. Not that we don't need it with this Brazos Creek. It's supposed to be a river, you know.
Yeah. If you hear that wind going in the background, that's probably my little heater down there. I'm trying to stay warm. It's still chilly out here.
Well, I didn't hear any wind. If I did, I'd know it wouldn't be one of them windbags expelling swamp gas up there in Washington.
Oh, geez, that's
your place.
Yeah, that just the whole Washington scene up there makes me sick to my stomach just listening to these folks. I get on the news and I'm listening to them. Let's see, it was on Fox and Hannity's show, I think it was. And they had a whole bunch of so-called liberals on there, you know, and they're asking about this new Obamacare being rolled out and all that kind of stuff. And as you listen to these people, I'm like, man, what world are these folks living in? It's just nuts. They obviously aren't in the reality zone. But,
I think government just tells everybody that, yeah, this is what you want, this is it, we're going to give it to you. Yeah, boy, they're giving it to us, all right. I mean, how many people are out there saying, oh, please hurry, give us that, we can't wait for Obamacare to start. And you don't hear any teenagers saying, yeah, man, shoot, hurry up, give me that chip so I can be like the Borg.
There's a lady that did a Mary Greeley on her YouTube channel and does a deal. She was showing all the numbers of all the different costs for different portions of the state for Obamacare. It's pretty sickening, man.
Well, from the tone of your voice,
I don't know. That sounds bad. Yeah, the government's always, like $500 hammers. Come on, man. They show the whole list of every little process that hammer went through, Dick. And the cool thing is the military operates in spite of itself.
Oh, yeah. You know?
I mean, for some reason, that whole system just clicks. But, my goodness, that sure does cost an awful lot.
I tell you, I would love to have the same credit card that the United States government has. I mean, it must be a nice one because, you know, everybody else is paying the bill and you don't have to worry about it and you can just keep on spending and spending. And like you said, man, the military, they waste an astronomical amount of money on a hammer that you could go to the store and buy for, you know, a couple bucks. Yeah.
You know how it is, man. I mean, they got this this fancy paper with cotton fabric through it and a little strip down it, and it's got magnetic ink all over it, and they call it a dollar bill. And you give that and your nickel-plated copper and zinc, and you send that all in, and they send it all back to you in aluminum. Yeah. Nanoparticle aluminum. They spend all that money to get these jets up in the air and to get all that nanoparticles processed and stored on there so they can spray it. And say, here you go, it's raining money. And ain't doing nothing but clogging up the leaves and trees and stuff. Comes through the root, goes up there and will not leave the leaves, and it kills the leaves, and the tree can't make food, and it dies. And, that's what you're paying for. You know, they do a real good job of it.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's just the whole thing's just nuts. I mean, you know, you factor in all the different little skirmishes going on that we're involved in overseas and more on the way. And then you factor in that when old B.O. said he was going to fundamentally trash America, he wasn't joking, was he?
No. I mean, my goodness. Now, you tell people something like this, is that a good way to get reelected? I don't think so. You think anybody actually did elect him in there? Come on, it's common sense.
Well, his real word was fundamentally transform.
Yeah, I like them big words.
Yeah, well, I don't know, man. We all know there's some sort of corruption at the top. I mean, from top to bottom, there's a lot of corruption, and I guess it ain't going to do no good to sit around and complain about it. So, what are we going to do, man? People...
Write them a letter, right?
Yeah.
It has come to the attention of this office that many unsolicited Ontario Redders have been tramping on the premise of the direct derelators. Further ramifications can and will result in immediate contorty and derunment of every Sarmance involved. This means you, the people of the government, blah, blah, blah. And they can take it for whatever it is, because not a word of it's in the dictionary. I can put all sorts of stuff that they don't understand, too.
Yeah. Well... You know, that makes about as much sense as what they say. I mean, it's just, I don't know, it's mind-boggling. It's until the average Joe gets it in their head that they got to do the research before they go pull the lever to do any kind of voting, and then they got to make sure they track that vote, you know? Follow the vote all the way to make sure it gets properly counted, because with the election fraud, you remember we won all the way back whenever... we had the old don't hang my Chad thing going on.
Right? Yeah, Florida really did a good job of messing up, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, and then they, you know, they snuck in the whole electronic voting, and now, you know, with just a little bit of computer knowledge, folks can go in there and hack the crud out of it and, you know, give candidate A... did you ever see on my... on my Shaziz.com site where in the joke section you go there and it says vote for the 2013 election or something like that. And
no, I didn't see that one. I've seen the site. That's a killer site.
Anyway, the there's a section in there where you can click on it and you can go to vote for president, and every single vote counts towards the same guy. And you know who that is, right?
Yeah.
So it's just kind of a mockery of the whole system, because that's essentially what goes on, man. You know, you got liberal sections of the United States and conservative sections, supposedly, you know, the blue and the red states and all that kind of stuff, and a whole lot of dirty deeds going on behind the scenes, dead people voting, and some dead people vote 20 times, multiple times, you know.
Yeah, I got vote for you, but I wouldn't wish it upon you, so.
Yeah, well, vote for Congressman Bongwater. I mean, he tells it like it is. Lick me and I'm going to screw you on taxes.
Or Dark Helmet.
Yeah.
That'll add to the swamp gas. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. But,
y'all have to see his video.
Yeah, that was pretty
Dark
funny.
Dark Helmet on YouTube on Shaziz, and on his videos, type
Dark Fro.
Helmet. Huh?
Dark Fro.
Dark Fro, that's what
yeah.
It was. It's hilarious, guys. Shaziz does a great job on it. Dark Fro. It's like Darth Vader. And
yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Definitely go there.
I about Dark died laughing watching that video.
On YouTube. Go ahead and give him some views. Throw some comments in the bottom. Give him something to yak about out here, too, as well. Yeah, I'll let it back to you, Bob.
Sometimes you gotta let some humor in your life, man. That's why I make some videos like, you know, Congressman Bongwater or Dark Fro or whatever, you know. Laughter is good medicine. You know, in the society that we live in today, with things being as messed up as they are, you know, we got Jeff Kelly. I'm going to add him in the group here. Hey, brother, how you doing?
Jose, I just turned the music down. I'm just telling Facebook to go and fuck. Hang on. Excuse my French.
Yeah, be real careful about that.
Hang on just a moment. Hang on. That is Jim Slender, actually.
So you have to turn your video... You have to turn...
That's it.
You have to turn your video off. It's killing the call.
I've done it. No, I'm just so exasperated.
Yeah, I'm back.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, but you have to turn your video off. It's killing the call.
Hang on. Oh, yeah. I'll yeah. Oh, Jesus. I should know this. My head is, as they say... Preferably.
Hey, Matty, have you ever met Jeff Kelly?
Who talking to?
Scott Brown. It's Muddy Muddy Mud Man. He's on here with us.
No, I don't think so.
That's a cool name.
Well, say hi.
Hi, Muddy Muddy Mud Man.
So, how you been, brother? I ain't heard from you for a long time.
Oh, well, I've been up and down in health-wise. I collapsed again last week, and I just couldn't breathe last week. But they put me on some medication, and you know, 2 days later, I sort of fell out of bed, and I can't breathe. And I rang a neighbor, and she came in and got the doctor, and he immediately spotted it was a tablet. And gave me an injection, and in fact, I think it was what we call it, adrenaline, you know. But it took about 4 days to get it out of the system, so he made a mistake. But I moved on, and I've been doing an awful lot of work in the background. As you know, I moved home to Ballinair, and I've been you know, agitating, educating, and organising since I got there, you know, got here, and. There's two or three beautiful projects I've got, you know, not in the pipeline, they're actually out on the street now.
Yeah, I'm on the other computer.
Yeah, so that's it. So I'll just let you talk for a moment while I relax and get a drink. My throat is as dry as the desert.
Yeah, I understand. You take it easy, brother. Don't wear yourself down.
It's really good to hear you, yeah, because I heard about all the, you know, the stuff and all the rope and way, but it's so good to see you, you know, keep on keeping on, Mark. It's so good to be able to talk to you today, you know. Cool. Anyway, we'll carry on our training.
So where were we, Muddy?
Oh, well, my other computer somehow froze up on Skype there when he made the call, so I don't know what happened there.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of that going on these days. I had computer problems yesterday. Hopefully we'll hold out long enough to get the Knights of Round Table show in today. But yeah. We were essentially talking about the way the system is all messed up, you know, and the average Joe out there just, you know, they don't think they can do anything about it, and they can, you know. They got the power of the spoken word, the power of the pen, the power of their actions. I say this all the time. All they got to do is, you know, try to do something in their local level. I mean,
absolutely.
Starts from the bottom to the top. You're not going to get these guys up there in the government to ever represent you as long as they're being paid off. What do you think? Buddy, you there?
Yeah. Ah! Computer problems, bud.
Oh.
And confusion. Okay. Mm-hmm. Everything's straight now.
All right. Well, remember, we're live on air here, brother.
Sorry about that.
I love that name, Muddy Muddy Mudman.
Oh, thank you very much, Jeff.
It's good.
Yeah, good to meet you.
I'm going to spread that around my network, you know. Muddy Muddy Mudman, you must listen, you must have, and whatever. Cool,
yeah, he's got his own. He's got his own YouTube channel, and he makes actual flux wind turbines and designs his own props and stuff like that.
Oh, cool! Because yeah. I've got a few guys, as you say, as I've got you at it, so I'll make sure I put that on later. And you know what do you do on? You just follow, don't you? That sort of thing. Yeah, that's cool. I love that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I've got me about closing in on about 14,000 subscribers. It's getting to be fun.
Isn't it good, isn't it? You know, when you start reaching out, you know, it's cool, you know.
Yeah, that's a key word right there, the whole reaching out thing, and that's another way that people can actually make a difference in the world, you know, shows like this, and right now we're broadcasting on multiple networks. The main ones right here is Awake Radio and No Borders Radio and Shaziz Radio. And, you know, we've got people that rebroadcast our shows, and so we are actually able to reach out to all the different nations and give people good information about things like alternative energy, alternative food, some legal help as far as, you know, looking into different things in the law and learning and all that kind of stuff. I think it's a pretty good thing we got going on.
Oh, heck yeah. Go ahead, Kelly. Oh, man, sorry, I just had my desk is totally, it's like chaos. I had a friend in yesterday. She's a beautiful girl, Josephine. She saved my life this year. You know, she's, you probably see my postings about the dereliction that I live in, you know, and it's great because I'd spent 2 years in really bad accommodation, or not particularly deliberately, but because that was the only thing available and wow. to me. And so what I did was I'd had enough. And I took about 60 photographs of the property I live in, and I called it Reality versus Myth. And the thing is, for the last 2 years or so, I've been putting up on the web idyllic conditions behind me kind of thing. And it's a fool, not the, shall we say, governments. I don't give a damn about them or the state or any of the people that are out to get me. And I'm not paranoid, you know. They are out to get me. And I just bypass them. But it was the fool. Is that me jumping about? Or are you?
No, that's me.
Oh, that's okay. I waited yourself for that one. No, it was to go at this concept in Ireland at the moment, especially, solidarity, you know. And as you know, I've been highly active. I've been banned by the state from broadcasting, all kinds of stuff. I got cancer. I'm terminal. I'm, you name it, man, homeless. Every damn thing in the last 2 years since I come, 3 years since I contracted cancer. I lost my family, my children, everything. But as you know, I bounce back, and I don't, they're gonna, as my best friend says, I'm gonna have to shoot you in the head to get rid of you, Jim. And then they'll have to concrete me over, and I'll still dig my way out. But coming home was the, you know, as they say in Ireland, the salmon always returns to the river where it was spawned. And that is exactly in my case. I lost everything. And one by one, my greater family in Ballinair, my clan, Tankila, has gathered, you know, organically. I didn't go out, I didn't reach out to them. They came, I found them one by one on the street, and we've just got this amazing dynamic going in Ballinair. I went to the art centre, I volunteered there, I'm in a position now that offers to put an exhibition of my photographs out later on, but I just thoroughly enjoyed all this artistic and creative thing that Ballinair town is doing for itself. And one of the great things we've organised, and now in the last 3 weeks, you know, taking part in a steering committee for Ballinair Community Radio. So it'll be a 15-mile radius around Ballinair town, and also on the internet. Now it's state-funded, blah 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 blah, and being in at the ground level is absolute, you know, ideal opportunity. Not to push anything that I have always pushed, except in my own programme. Say, we have three or four at the moment, if you like, people who are highly experienced in radio broadcast. There is manager Sean, who manages the Admiralty and manages the Ballinair Arts Centre, and you should add them and like them, you know. We've got tons of top line acts with, and all the way down to local bands, gatherings, you name it. It's a real community, people's art, art centre. It's the hub of the community. So I got involved slowly with them as they pointed out. I was too little to do too much, if you wouldn't let me. But gathering the speed, we're doing that now. We're trying to, well, we are getting a lot of feedback and a lot of interest in Ballinair Community Radio. So that is so cool. It's a non-elitist, as you said earlier. It's from the ground up. It's what the community wants. It's not what we want as individuals. In our own programs, in our own broadcasts.
We're talking about terror. You're talking about terror broadcast, not internet, right?
Both.
Sweet.
15-mile terrestrial, you know, big aerial, big, well, I won't say a big aerial, you know what I mean. And it's a 15 to, say, 20-mile radius around, and we have a great catchment area. So that means we go over the border and everything, you know, and co-joined with a simultaneous broadcast with the internet. So that's just one item. I'm heavily involved in, as you can appreciate, having to start the radio station from zilch, from zero, you know, from ground zero. And the other thing is, having lived in, if you like, this dereliction in the town, in an area, which originally was, I used to come here on holiday, and my grandmother and my uncles and granduncles, everybody, you know, all upstanding members of the community, raise their children and generations of children. Well, right the way back to my, I can go far as my sort of great grandfather in the town, and they're all up in the graveyard, you know. And what I did was I went round one morning. I was so ill, and I also go out for a walk and take my camera. And what it was, I went to, we have, I, it was in a 300-yard, less really, 300-yard radius from my house. There's 21 derelict, abandoned or burnt out, perfectly good housing accommodation. So I took photographs of that, and on my way, I was talking to a really nice guy in the community. He was rather suspicious of what I was doing, because I always go around pretty dressed up, you know. And well, so I stand out. but he was a lovely man, and I talked to him. He asked me what I was doing. And then as soon as he found out that my uncle Mortine, who was, as he said, the fisherman, the preacher, that was it. You know, that was it. I was in the community, and this guy is from a, shall we say, an indigenous background, a travelling background, and we have a lot of indigenous travellers living in the area. And it's gained a notorious reputation, and that really annoys me, you know, because we're all fellow citizens, regardless of origination, and the traveller community in this town, and in Mayo particularly, in the West, right the way through to Dublin and over to England, are treated like, you know, as they were by the Nazis in pre-war Germany. You know, it's as simple as that. It's not this happy, you know, welcome to Ireland nonsense. They're just marginalised and harassed by the guards, everything. So I've managed to reach out to all different, you know, people, characters, you know, what should we call it, ethnic minorities in our small estate, if you like, which I've, is, Mayo is originally part of the barony of Tyrone. In fact, we're the only place in Mayo that's actually, the streets are called Tyrone. So I adopted that. I've made a kind of grassroots housing initiative. I've got some excellent people behind me, administrators, you know, real one foot in the establishment and one foot out. And within minutes, I'm on board, yeah. I'll go away and do the plan. We need to set up a charity, to make a formal housing association, and then what I want to, or we want to do, is all these houses, this is the ironic thing, the majority of these houses are owned by the Mayo or Ballina County councils, and so it's council property, and I intend to get all those properties into our care, and through voluntary you know, it means there's tons of builder types unemployed in the area, in Tyrone. In fact, most people are unemployed. It's not unusual. And get the funding, because I have a great skill at gaining funding from the state. I've worked with them before. They've given it with combat poverty and all kinds of things. And it's gathering momentum on the ground, and that's what it's about. It's about, you know, this little, as you said earlier, it's about an individual, Now, I think I can blow my trumpet today. I feel so good about what I have achieved for the people of my community, going back right the way to my great-great-grandfather.
You should blow your trumpet, because you are a testament of somebody who's overcome a whole lot of adversities and actually trying to put some effort towards getting some homes out there that can be used by the people who really need them, you know.
And the ironic thing is, Chef, is that there are several hundred people on the housing list, and we know that for years in Ballinasloe. There are 4,000 people on the council, the Greater Council housing list, you know, for social housing. They don't have squat. They're living in worse conditions than I. Visit my profile, both of you, at some point, and look for the once were community. The pictures I'm talking about, they're all up there. And then there is a set of photographs, about 16, of my actual domain, you know, where I'm living. Yeah. Now, I'm actually in the process of moving out, only through the help of members of this community, members of my family who live here, have every faith in me and every love for me. And all this, you know, I should be out of here this week, but only not out of the area, but just up the road. So it's happening, Reg, you know what I mean? It's just like Monty Python, just like The Life of Brian. There's so many people, and I just put a note, I'll have to be honest here, and I have to be brutal. I just put a notice up on my Facebook. Basically, I won't say the words I used, but I did say that I have 66 likes on the new initiative. It's only been up there a week. The actual this page of Once Were Community. And I have 66 likes. Everyone I know that is from the area or fellow, you know, activists, trustworthy throughout Ireland, sort of thing, to support me. But I've just had enough, and I put a notice of thanking the 66, and basically, you know, shaming the hundreds and hundreds of activists in Ireland that I have helped in the past, over since probably 2005 in the community, taking photographs, running around, helping them set up things like, you know, what they're spouting up about now. They haven't the first clue about any strategies, you know, all this anti, you know, I'll say anybody. It's always anti-something, and they're all standing outside, as you said earlier, I think it was Muddy Muddy Bad Man, outside the door saying, you know, it's almost like Father Ted, down with this sort of thing, and Dougal replies, it must be an ecumenical matter. And you see, what they're doing is protesting about a sex film that's being shown in the local cinema. But it's a, you know, soft porn thing. But it's so funny. But that's exactly what it is. And as you say, the last thing that the government, the state, the police, anything, the establishment, the status quo, is going to take notice of is you standing outside the door just every now and again shouting at them. They're laughing at you. That's how I see it. My philosophy is don't look for a deal, bypass the temps and do it yourselves, like I've done. Like I've crawled out of my terminal cancer sickbed and done it all in a matter of weeks, if you like, all this stuff. It's taken months for me personally, because I can hardly move around, as you know, I'm on sticks and everything, but I still do it. And that's what you need to do. The individual needs to have an impact on society. Not deal with the state, not deal with the politicians. I often ask politicians, and tell me if I'm rambling or going on, what do I need a politician for? Tell me. We are a republic. We need to have our revolution. That was in 1916. We were a so-called republic. We're not actually, we're just a parliamentary, watered down version of Britain, you know. And that's what they've embraced. We have the blue shirts in charge, Enda Kenny and all those, you know, wasters, you know. As they used to say in the past, one for the boat, you know. And it's pathetic. And people are following these people around. It's like hair coursing. They're chasing the hair, but the hair's in charge, you know. They won't empower themselves for some reason. They don't stand up. They don't add me on Facebook. They don't dare add like. And actually, what that proves to me is I'm actually doing my job. You know, I'm probably the most unpopular activist, you know, in Ireland, not by the government or anything, but by the other activists. Oh, yeah, is that now? What's he doing now? You know, I failed time and time again, as you know, because of the illness and everything's happened. And I was going to go on to Tina G. I was going to do all kinds of things. I've got a colostomy back, you know. Jesus Christ.
Well, where I come from, they got a saying, the squeakiest wheel gets the grease, and it seems that you're pretty squeaky, so you've been at it, brother.
Oh, yeah.
Can I just say,
it's only because of guys like you, Chelsea, that I remember, and Beverly, yeah. And all the people, you know, that I know support me, you know, the Robins that I know, and various other people, you know, the lovely people. And my family, Elaine, she's beautiful, she's got huge, she's got these Celtic tattoos, she's gorgeous. And I have known her from a child, and I said to her father, sorry mum, I'm stealing your daughter, I've adopted your daughter. But she's a great friend, and a great support, and she's put some cool comments up there. I mean, today, for example, I have three Facebooks. Dad's Justice, Jeffrey Kelly, and George Alfaldi, and Shiv Rocky, and the collective friends on there must, I don't know, there's hundreds and hundreds, and I went round them all, I went down them, I thought they'd be clubbing up all night doing it, and I don't sleep much, I can't sleep, and I just pressed everybody that was on beach that I felt would be beneficial, should we say, to I want to build up the dynamic on my site, on Jeffrey Kelly, to make it a central thing, you know. So I only asked the people that have already added me on Dad's Justice and on, by the way, we're on state radio on Tuesday, that's how good we are. And they're taking notice of the whole thing. And we've got some good people. That's for the child, single father's rights. As you know, we don't have any rights at all over our children. And we're trying to change that rapidly. We need to change that. The demographic in Ireland has changed rapidly over the... I've been back 25 years. They all think I'm on holiday, you know, yesterday or something. And over the last 25 years, Ireland has changed. Dragged itself by its bootlaces, if you like, into the 21st century, but not the government, not the establishment, not the church, not all the things that people rely on, such as the social services, the hospitals, you know, whatever. It's the people themselves, the ones like yourselves, who, and a lot of my friends and family and comrades, have just said, no, we don't want it. We'll do it ourselves, thank you very much. And I mean, as you know, Ireland has a reputation, the Irish people have a reputation for being lawless, and we are, because what law is it that we're adhering to? We're adhering to a watered-down version of a parliamentary democracy. We're just at the debacle of trying to get rid of the Shannon, you know, and I don't particularly agree with the Shannon in its present form, yeah? And the only the people voted no to the abolition of the Shannon, and which is very important. And there's some good people in there, as well as bad, the usual sponges and everything else, living on hundreds of thousands of pounds in Dublin and being creative and cultural. And they'll look at me and I support gay rights and this, that, and the other. And then they piss off to Thailand or somewhere and screw little Taiwanese boys because the younger, you know, it's just all that stuff. And when I bring that stuff up, I'm again marginalised. some of the people that I think would say, "Hey, Jeff Kelly's right, stand by him." No, marginalising, get rid of him. Yeah.
Well, it seems to me that
I don't give a shit.
seems to me that a lot of people in this world, they don't really want to know the truth about anything. You know, it's basically too painful to hear. You know, until the average Joe gets their act together, you can't ever expect any government to do, you know, what they're supposed to be doing as representatives. So, as far as I'm concerned, we all got our work cut out for us, but I don't feel like it's a lost cause. I think we're actually making ground. You know, we're getting these networks put together. They're growing by leaps and bounds. And
absolutely, man. And I would say, you know, in a sense, if I was American, I'd envy me, because quite simply, my task is quite simple. Believe it or not, I only have to worry about including the north of Ireland. Not, it's cold. But in total, there's around 4.5 million people, and it's still like a village. People from one end of the country know me, not because I'm on the web, but they know me. It's like a village. It still is like a village, and that is what is important. I only have to deal with 4.5 million people, and within that, I only have to deal with perhaps 100,000 citizens, as I say. Who are actively support the major political parties such as Sinn Féin or Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil or Labour. You know, it's like the Green Party. They actually banned me from broadcasting, you know. And the minister, Eamon Ryan, actually did me a favour, you know. But they banned me. And some of the most prominent people on that board, such as John Waters, the journalist, was, you know, and, you know, Mr. Street Cred, he was one of the people that voted out, you know. And I just walked away, said, yeah, I don't accept it. And off I went. And what was I going to say? So each area, it's like our health minister, for example, is a multimillionaire, is a landowner, he's the most corrupt, and he's proven corrupt, and he's bankrupt, and he's everything. And he's still in charge of a whole nation's health, and he's such a charlatan. He does deals. He favours his own area to put in these so-called fast-tracking health. It's a success.
Sounds like the politicians around the world all have something in common.
Yeah, they do. But you see, in Ireland, there's only 100,000 supporters. I mean, for example, the Green Party had about 1,000 members when they were in power. Fine Gael, I think, only has about 4,000. You know, Sinn Féin had that many. You know, and that's it. And I remember reading the CIA handbook. It says all you need, and I do, I often access, you know, the CIA thing site for my information. I get most of it from there. They have to give it away, you know. And he just says, in one line, you only need 5,000 people to take over the whole fucking country.
Well, that's pretty much what they're doing now here.
Yeah, that's what they're doing there now. That's pretty much what we're doing here. It's going to come to a head, especially with the border, with the north, you know, and all those people are forgotten. And of course they say, oh, the majority favour the UK. And of course they do. Why? Because they're subsidised to tune, I think it's 13 to 14.5 billion every year. So you withdraw that subsidy. What have they got? They've got squat. You know. My only question to the British, I just finished on this. My only question to the British is, excuse me, what ferry do you want to get back home? End of story. This is Ireland now. There's only 5,000 soldiers now. That's it. There's hundreds of thousands. All kinds of things. People killed every day. My compatriots, my countrymen, my relatives. Men, women and children slaughtered. And there still are. No. They're still shot in the back. They're still killed, still raped, they're still murdered. We have the most famous, feared politician, Gerry Adams, whose brother has just been convicted of, you know, incestuous paedophilia. For God's sake, that man kept quiet for 20 bloody years. And I've been roughly the only person in Ireland during this time since 1998 that knew about, you know, his brother's activities, should we say, in Dundalk, where I lived. And I proved it. I can't get the book published. I'd probably get shot by somebody. You know, somebody. It wouldn't be anybody like the likes of Jerry. I mean, I know. I think he's actually a very good man. You know, but it's nonsense. We're dealing all the time with like 17th century politics.
Well,
so what I say is, I say no, stop. Just like the French, it's time for the Second Republic. No violence, a creative republic, and sack them all. Put them all in jail. They all deserve to be in jail.
Man, I think you're right. The jailhouses would be overflowing if we could get all the politicians in there.
Oh no, I've got a great plan for that. Great plan. They get a choice with all the pedophile priests and archbishops and all the cover-ups. You say, you see that stone ball there, right? There's the ferry port. Oh, there's the airport. Right, you can get direct. We'll give you a ticket to Rome. Don't live there. Go to England, you can have a free ferry, and then that's it. So we don't want you.
Well, that's what we should do. Put them all on a ship and send them off to one of them islands, and they can do their own little version of the Survivor, you know.
And if we don't have enough prisoners, because the prisons are full with people, full of working class people, peasant class people, for fines, for not paying their television license, for this, and we have, you know, serial paedophiles like, you know, the one I got banned over, the father of Oliver O'Grady. Came to some talk and I got rid of him and got banned for it. He ran away to, I think it was somewhere in Holland anyway, and he was found giving the sacrament as a brother, as Brother Francis, and he took a runner because of, you know, he was seen and came back to Ireland. He was arrested and all this stuff, and then he went back again and he left his laptop on the plane. And it was 250,000 images of children. And he also was proven to have a lockup in North Dublin, North Side Dublin, with three workstations. So he had people working for him, distributing child pornography.
So how do these folks like this?
They just walk away. He's just done it, I think it was 18 months he got for that.
How do these folks like this end up getting, I mean, it's like, this guy that they call our president right now, he must be made out of Teflon because nothing seems to stick on him. I mean, these guys seem to get by with murder, you know?
Of course the president does. I mean, just take a look at Gaza, take a look at the Middle East, take a look anywhere. At any one time in Ireland, there's 500 between MI5, MI6, and CIA. Because what they do is... The MI5 works for Ireland, for America here, and then it's the other way around, and they come here. But any time there's 500 on the streets agitating. I did a little blog the other week about Agent Provocateur, you know, in the annals of Irish history. It's well known. And just a minute, one of my neighbours is knocking on the door, so I'll get back to you in a moment.
You still there, Marty?
Oh yeah, pretty amazing man there. I'm kind of honored to meet him.
Yeah, Kelly, he's been doing a lot. He's tries to help out a lot of people, and he's had a lot of health problems that he's had to contend with as well. But you know, you got to give the man credit. I mean, he even though he's not feeling well, he's still out there. He's trying to make his community a better place, and so to me, Kelly's a testament of what people should be doing out there. You know, if he can do it, anyone can do it. I mean, he's...
We were talking about Obama.
Yeah. No, we were talking about you, brother.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can I just say, just jump in there before I say, that's what I mean by community. I just had a knock on the door. A young lad. Mommy says, do you want each one to come over for some dinner?
Well, see, brother, go over there and have your last meal.
I've actually eaten something, but I'll go over and I will eat. She'll put it in the microwave now. And after this, I'll go over there and relax and enjoy the company, family, you know. And they've become adopted family. But that's the family that the mother comes in here and cleans up for me. And, you know, she's everything. She's a dote. And she's related through a circuitous way, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And she's now family. We're all family. She's my sister, and her husband is my brother. And he's been running me around to do all the official stuff this week so I can get some, you know, housing allowances and things. I mean, I exist on, what is this, 188 euros a week? Now, you work that out in dollars, I can't tell you, it's probably about $5, you know. And
wow.
I don't need much, you know, because I don't spend much, you know, because I haven't got it to spend. But can you imagine, like, even that father doesn't work, the mother doesn't work, they're on benefits, the stress, the children, they need clothing, they need shoes for school, they need all kinds of everything, nothing. It's the same throughout the town. But we still have a community, thank God, that does that and helps. And once they identify you, and you're genuine, you're genuine.
Like that, a lot of people know how to make things rather than have to go buy them. They learn how to make things.
When you're on the council estate, if you like, with no ground, no money to make anything, you know, you couldn't even buy a saw, you know, and you got maybe half a dozen kids. I despair. Sometimes I just cry and cry and cry. I really do. Not only for my own situation, because of my despair with not being able to access my children for 2 whole years.
I want to tell you a story, Kelly, because what you talking about?
I'll shut up and listen.
Hey,
hold up. I'm supposed to listen, aren't I?
I found out a long, long time ago that the most giving people are the people who are at the bottom, who know what it's like to actually have to suffer.
Yes.
I was in California one time, and we were broke down.
Yep.
And I was looking for somebody, and I found a family, a small family, and they lived in a house that wasn't much larger than a shed, you know. Is that had like 3 rooms in a little bathroom and a bedroom and a dining room. Well, they brought me and my friend in and actually fed us a meal, and it was a wonderful meal. But it struck me so hard, because here were some folks that they didn't have nothing to give, but they were willing to share whatever they had, you know. And
absolutely,
that just sticks in my mind. And when you was talking about your neighbors like that, I mean, it's incredible.
You know, I honestly, it is. I'll be absolutely blunt. When I came home, I had got this place, and I was totally into the depths of despair. I was, as Beverly would say, I was in hell. You know, definitely hell on earth. I suffered the loss of my whole family, my brothers, my sisters, everybody walked away. Everyone I knew, even my friends, everything. Babies had gone. Like, I've got 7 children, for Christ's sake, 9 grandchildren, all alienated by one person. There's always a toxic person that does this. And this has the law on its side, so it happens. And my elder children withdrew because they knew what was happening to Daddy, and they know that Daddy's an activist, and I wouldn't want them involved, you see. So I just said, you know, big kids, stay the hell away from Daddy, you know, and then we'll get back to, you know, get on with your life, I'll deal with it. So I came into this house, and for about 3 months I didn't see anybody. I was in dark. I didn't put the lights on, I didn't do anything. I just cried and dealt with the cancers and emptying the colostomy bags and spilling it at night, it burst in the bed. I was crying over that, you know, just in absolute despair. You know, while that was happening, my next door but one neighbor hung himself.
Yeah.
The guy over the road died of drink, fell in the street, you know, this kind of thing. Not despair. So what do? I eventually managed to get down the town. I couldn't walk down the town with a stick, my camera, and I leant on the wall on the by the river. I wasn't contemplating jumping in. I was wanting to photograph it. But my hands were so cold, no gloves, not any proper clothing, because I wasn't allowed to take any from my home. And I saw this sign through the lens, and it said, the Mo Valley Over 55s Club. So I got it in my lens, and it says, I saw a cup of tea, have a biscuit and the crack, you know. And I thought, Jeffrey, I know about it. I'll just wander down and see what it's like to be elderly at 63. For the first time in my life, I went to find out what it's like to be elderly for half an hour. And I walked in that, looking like a tramp. I was. And there's a beautiful girl in there, one of the staff, Canadian. And big smile. I love Canada and Canadian, and particularly Montreal, and particularly, you know, Quebec, you know, and Montreal City, very creative city. And I've got a lot of friends there. And I nearly made the mistake of misjudging her accent for a Yank. I'm sure. And but the thing was, she had this huge maple leaf thing on the front of her jumper. And I was so, you know, out of it. I said, oh, I'm sorry. You know, I'm sorry. Canada, yeah. And but she was so full of life and bubbly. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And from then on, that's been my saving grace. And I've developed there. There's computers, there's day trips, I've been fishing, there's, you know, trips everywhere, and it costs nothing. And I'm trying to encourage that in the elderly, if you like, you know, elderly, but not elderly at all. So it's all doing an old job, you know. I'm not. And so I've got tons of friends there, and it inspired me to go further and further, yeah? And if I'm too sick, I can just ring them, you know, and they'll come and pick me up. Or if they don't see me for a couple of days, they come round to the house and see if I'm all right, things like that. And that's what, this is what our community is like. This is what we're building.
Well, I think that's a wonderful thing. I think we need to keep it rolling. I mean, it's inspiring to listen to all the things that you've been through in your life, and actually, you know, you're still out there trying to do something, and that's what I keep trying to point out to everybody. You know, folks feel like they're powerless, and I want everybody out there to realize that you're more important than you could possibly imagine. You know, you personally, the listener, the people out there in this world, you have so much to offer the world, and, you know, you're not powerless.
It doesn't matter whether the state or anybody, any individual, accepts what you're trying to do. I just bypass them. I say, excuse me, you're no longer a part of my experience. Do you mind moving away? I don't say, I say it more forcibly and perhaps a little more rude than that sometimes. It's necessary. But no one ever comes up to me, and no one in England ever called me Paddy. No one ever called me for dare. It's almost like, you know, for black guys, it's okay for them to call themselves what they call themselves, but it ain't right for anyone else to call them that, and it ain't right for anyone to call, because outsiders, as my friend James Lennon sings, you go beyond the borders, you're still a leprechaun, you know, you're a paddy. Yeah, that's we're Irish here, they think they're Irish here, but I'll tell you, I get away with it because I have an English accent. And they ask me, where'd you get to? I said, don't make that mistake, brother. A lot of people have made that mistake. You know. Have you not heard of emigration? You know? And the pathetic. But it isn't the people I'm saying are pathetic. It's the powers that be. As you say, the people are put into a corner. They're treated like dogs. They're frightened. They're cowed down. And when it comes to election time, you see this amazing word coming out from every corner. Citizens. Citizens' rights. Citizens. You hear this word like pathetic.
Oh, yeah, they have all the keywords that are going to try to, you know, cater to people who are downtrodden, but, you know, what do they do once they actually do get elected? They forget all about the people. The only time the people at the bottom matter is when election time's around. Suddenly they're your friend, you know? But when it comes down to putting a roof over a homeless man's head, they'd rather throw that homeless man in jail as opposed to building him a house.
And in Ireland, they just leave him on the street, man.
Yeah.
They don't waste the money throwing him in jail. They just let him die of the frost, you know, the cold. And it's absolutely freezing at the moment. You wouldn't believe it. It goes from the summer to winter almost. And we're not equipped here to deal with that. The houses are usually concrete block built. You know, the poorer social housing. The cherry built, as they used to say. The cowboy builders during the so-called tiger years. And half the amount of properties that we have empty. And they're still building. This is what my contention is with the, if you like, the was for the community, is whilst I mentioned those figures of people, on the lists, they're insisting and they're passing brand new houses, housing estates, over near to Westport, that area, where the more touristy areas are, and of greenfield sites, and ruining the countryside that people, love and cherish and come to visit. They just don't know what they're doing. And like I'm involved with, I've been for years, with the Shelter Sea. And that bunch of, charlatans have been here thinking up our, they were given away, and our natural resources were given away to Shell by the so-called Green Party minister, the same guy that banned me. It's just a complete and utter tosser.
Something you said there kicked off a thought in my head, when you was talking about the resources and all that kind of stuff. Over here in the United States, they start declaring all kinds of land, natural reserves and stuff like that. With all the resources that we have here in the United States alone, there's enough resources to make sure that there is no homeless people in this world. And even in your area, you guys got some really beautiful countrysides out there.
Oh, yeah.
And there's, with all the resources that everybody has available, there's no reason for anybody to be on the streets.
No, absolutely not. And I'm an original landleaguer, way back. The man himself was from Mayo. Most people are from Mayo. Has made any impact on this country, and you know about the land league, all that stuff. But I have no difficulty. I supported a very brave farmer in Limerick, and a very popular man, and I love the bones of him. And we set up the anti-eviction thing and helped him on the first weekend when he called for help, and we barricaded it amongst others. You'll see the photographs on my profile. It took a year or more, just over a year, but the banks, everything, they were going to send the army in, they sent in private security men, and he was beaten up, almost to a pulp, the farmer, and everything. And they used him as an example on primetime television and this kind of stuff, tried to make a fool of him like they usually do. It's kind of, a bit of a charlatan. And the other friend of mine, because he hadn't paid his mortgage, he was, a tall, handsome guy, and he basically was suggesting that he put it up against the wall or up his nose. This is what's happening all over. But because we said no, and the sheriff comes and runs off, the sheriff came, you see the video, the sheriff, it just so happened to be the former Justice Minister, from Blackrock, and it's his sister, for God's sake. His sister's from Bandon, was in Bandon, Rogue Bandon, Brigands, and she done a runner. She went, and she couldn't. We got one of our top activists, Finn Balmarkey, arrested, and he's great. But he's a doctor, he's a very highly intelligent man. He knows all about the system, and he's just 24/7 fighting.
I just thought of something that's kind of ironic. The activist gets thrown in jail, and the politician gets elected office. It should be the other way around.
But at least we have the sheriff running down the road. I've got some great snaps that are going. a worried face, and these big burly, burly, what they call security men, private security men, with their heads down. And I'm in front of them taking a picture, and I'm 60 years old, man, and I've got my combat on. I've got my combat hat and black glasses, and I always do that just for effect. And the guards all know me, and it's a brilliant day, and silly buggers, you must look at it, chat. I'm Woody Woody Red Man. how we tackle them, how we got rid of them, and they stood there with their arms crossed, and some of the more articulate guys in the front line there were asking them, what they were doing there, and I don't need to mention the names because they're all world famous, the guys that are doing it, really nice guys, if you see the photographs of that particular incident, that was really the first major one, and the second major one, should we say, was the farm, Seamus Sherlock, the farmer out in Limerick. Yeah, but that's about solidarity from my point of view, because I'm a landleaguer, and I don't believe in farmland being owned or anything, any land, any properties. Yeah, I believe, if you like, that every person, we have enough land to adequately give every single citizen, family, person in this country at least an acre of land or 2 acres of land, on already roads, without even touching the countryside. They can't think out of the box, these people, I would be against total ownership by the people of the land, and not allow even to have farmers to have 500, 1,000, 2,000 acres, which was hived off, it was squared off by the British, just to make it, then it filtered all the way down to like your peasant who's got half an acre, a sod hut like my grandparents lived in, and a pigsty, which they put the kids in, yeah. That's the reality, that's the truth, that's not me making it up. The statistics are there. We have a wonderful museum in Ballinair, and it's part of an old bank, I'll send you the link so you can have a look, it's fascinating. And we talk about having computers, and we can do this, and we can communicate and blah blah blah. And there's one man in this town, during the relevant time of our history and our formation as a republic, collected every single damn thing you could possibly think of, which is amassed into a archive, a wealth of information, newspapers, original gazettes, declarations, proclamations, everything. He didn't actually, he was a bit like me, he had it all over the place, and when he passed on, his dear wife collated it all with help. I'll send you the link. I'll put it out. I've got an article on my Facebook, but I'll certainly put it out again today. And you go in there, and you can see everything from the 1901, 1911 census, everything, the addresses of Brook Street, the conditions people were in, and it was around the time they were still suffering from the famines and the deaths. Where I go on in the week to help out and get some help because of my condition, it's a training place, but it's built on the famine graveyard. There's thousands of people under it, and just at the top of my road there's a beautiful park, again taking photographs, big monument to the famine victims. They're all built on, buried under this estate.
Wow.
Almost, but this is only like 100 years ago, isn't it,
man?
It's not, and it's still the same today. They're wasting people. The safety valve of emigration, there's 50,000 or whatever every 30 years kind of thing. All the youth are going. As soon as they finish school, they're gone, mate. Like rats out of the viaduct, as they say. I just despair sometimes. But what was happening is this grassroots movement that is having an effect. And all the people that are having an effect, should we say, it is all individual effort, amassed. There are people around them. It's become almost celebrity. I resent that through Facebook and all these things. It's to become celebrities, and they get lost in it. So they might as well be part of the establishment.
Yeah, that's a key.
You probably don't, but most of my stuff, I stay in the background. When I go to a rally or anything, I take photographs. I stay in the background. But I'm also quite, effective in the background, and supporting and doing whatever. And that was my beef this morning. I said I've got basically 66 likes, and I've got thousands of Facebook friends, and in real time, thousands of activist friends. And I just basically put, there's a song from Jinx Lennon again. Well, he's a good man. He is an excellent man. He's stuck by his guns, and his language when he sings, it could be considered offensive. I think it's poetry. It is poetry. All of his stuff is so, you must listen to him. Both of you. Jinx Lennon from Dundalk. And you see what I mean. And the song I put up was, as I said, the old phrase, the assumption, I assumed I would get some help from them. Just, all right, press Jeff's mic, and I'd have thousands by now. No, 66, I'm not diehards. And so I put up, as I say, as Hazel O'Connor's manager, Mo, he said to me one day, Jeffrey, remember, assumption is the mother of all fuck-ups. And I've kept that with me close to my heart ever since. And I put that out, and Hazel's absolutely beautiful person. And she's, you know, I won't tell you her age, but she's gorgeous, and she's active, and she's out working every year, you know, every night almost, touring around the bloody world. And she's great, and I love her.
Well,
to bones. Anyway, just say, there we go, we get to this point, and they're all full of shit, and that's what I told them this morning. And I put up Jim Slater's You Must Forgive the C-U-N-T, and that's his song. You must listen to that one, and it tells you everything about the state of the nation, if you like, his song, that one song. And I put that out there, and basically, as I put Not So Quiet, and I used the clip, Not So Quiet, not all, or whatever, not All Quiet, you know the film All Quiet on the Western Front, I used that, and I put the question mark in the end, and just, they can all go to sod as far as I'm concerned, you know, only the diehards will support me, and that's all I want. I'd rather they all came off my Facebooks, and I only had three people.
The reason why I'm trying to hold on to the Knights of the Round Table is because it's a platform for everyone.
Yeah.
You were talking about how some folks will get into trying to do good and then they'll get some sort of celebrity status. I wouldn't want that at all. I want everyone out there to understand that their input is just as important, if not more important, than my input or any of one of the hosts or listeners on this radio network.
Yeah.
That they can make a difference, and your testament of what can be done. I mean, you've overcome a whole lot of adversity and accomplished a lot, and that is something to brag about. That is impressive.
I let other people do that, and very kindly they do. You know, and they support me because of that. They see the real Jeffrey Kelly. You know, I often put up, "We're the real Jeffrey Kelly." Please stand up, you know, like the song. But it's who I am. I evolve every day. I change every day. I have. I was accused by my ex of in court of having a what was it called? What's that thing when you have a not split personality? You have a whatever it is, some kind of nonsensical emotion diagnosis, you know, you're not right in the head, like, you know. And the judge said to her, do we have any proof of this? And she put her head down and says, no, sir. It's just that, you know, can we move on? they know I'm not, but that could have resulted in anything, you know. But you can't defend anything. You can't say anything. They won't allow you to. And if you do start raving, grab him. He's violent.
Yeah, the doggone courts aren't set up to listen to anything you say. They already got their mind made up before you ever even walked through the door. So, you know, I try to avoid any contact with any law enforcement guys. I call them armed revenue generators for the state because they sure ain't honoring their oath of office. And as far as the court system, they're there to get money, and that's all it's about. The whole court system is nothing more than a money-generating scheme that if you follow the money, it always ends up in the same individual's hands, which is the bankers. And the bankers, you know, you're talking earlier about sending the military in on folks. They need to send the military in on the bankers because those guys are really corrupt.
But unfortunately, with the Irish Army, you know, forget it. They're basically all on our side. They're there for the beer, you know. Don't fight anybody. They go to Christy Moore sings a great song, you know, and it's about shooting Shiite shapes in the Phoenix Park, you know. But the great guys, you know, you talk to them when they're guarding the money, and they, you know, they're nice. Yeah, you know, nice. Look really good. I think they look excellent. And at least we've got our own army. It's not the British Army guarding the money. On it, except for a few miles up the road here. There's lots of British soldiers. I go over the border. I went over the border one time, and perfectly innocently, to return my friend's computer. And of course, you know, as I'm driving through Belfast, I changed the music from, if you like, rebel songs, then to British songs. As I saw the paving stones change from, you know, red, white, and blue to the Irish tricolour colours, and then you carry on and you don't open your window and you go in, because if I open the window, I got a lot of explaining to do, you know, to the ordinary person about my accident in those hot spot areas, and this is where he lived. And so I ended up a beautiful evening. Meal a lot. I set up his computer, I'd repaired it, and he was made up, and his wife came in late from work, and she was absolutely, because she loved the internet and all that kind of stuff, kisses, hugs, bye-byes, friends, you know. And don't forget, these are the enemy, you know. The Catholics, Dissident people, you know. Terrible, you know, nasty, horrible Irish people, but those are Irish types that just want to live and let live and live a life and bring their children up just like everyone else. And then I go down the road, and I'm approaching the border, and I say, oh, here we go. And I see this baton, and it's about three or four in the morning, and I see the barracks, and it's all, you know, huge blast-proof walls and cameras and barbed wire and God knows what. And I see this lunatic, and you've got to be very careful, because he's waving, you know, those sticks that they use, night sticks, and they wave them in the road. They do here anyway, that little luminous light, that's only the show, and it could be anything from a British soldier through to a, you know, a completely nonce loyalist or whatever, or a misguided Republican paramilitary patrolling the road, you don't know. And there I go, I stop the car very gently, don't brake, don't push, slam the window down, he says, you know, turn the engine off, and he gets on his little earpiece, and I look up. He says, turn your headlights down. And I just put my hand up to the guy in the armoured car with a heavy machine gun pointing at me and my family. My baby's asleep on the back seat, my wife terrified. I said, don't move. And he said, you got your lights, you got your identification. And I went to go to the glove compartment, and the gun came, and he said, it's okay, don't move, put your hands on the wheel. And he's still waiting, and then this other guy comes looking around the car, putting something under it. Terrified we were. I was terrified for my family, not these guys. And then I spoke to the soldier. I said, I recognise that accent. It was a Scouse accent, you know. And that's where I was brought up. I said, you're all right, lad, you know, and just, you know, blah, 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 blah. And he says, he went, tee, 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 tee. That's okay, Mr. Kelly. Thank you for your help and safe journey home.
And this is after he had a gun in your face?
And this is, you know, it's an inch from my fucking ear. And my babies, if I say slipped or turned the engine on slipped on the bloody accelerator, that machine gun, that heavy machine gun that you would see in any war zone, yeah, big armoured car, troops everywhere, would have just opened fire, and we would have been just like any, we see these videos when these poor guys are trying to photograph and they get shot by a remote control helicopter. You've seen all that lot, you know.
Oh, yeah.
WikiLeaks put out. That's exactly what it's like, happening every sodding day in the north of Ireland. And they talk about the peace process. You want to try going shopping there, man?
Well,
and you say the wrong thing. I may be
wrong, but I don't ever remember a time where peace ever came from the end of a barrel of a gun.
No. Well, peace and quiet does, because your head's blown off and you don't know anything about it.
Yeah, that's about the only peace you're going to get.
In Ireland, it's not the soldiers who rarely get shot, you know, rarely get killed, you know. It's the ordinary citizen, it's the people in the community that get blasted when the bombs go off. The children. There's a school in, and there's some beautiful pictures of these gorgeous little children, these Catholic children, in the middle of a loyalist area some years ago. It's classic. And you see that, I see my children are very Irish looking, and very beautiful, brown eyes a lot. And You see the little faces, you know, like when you see a child terrified and it's fallen over, or it might be some horrific shock from a dog, you know?
Yeah.
And the face screws up in agony and that, screaming and holding the mummy's hand. And the mothers and the fathers especially are targets, trying to take their children to school. To a school. To a school. And there's hundreds and hundreds of big, burly loyalist men and women, and they're the worst of women, you know, attacking children on the way to school every day for months. And the army, you know, thank God in a sense the army was there, because they escorted and kept safe the majority of those children. But that went on for such a long time, and that's happening all the time, you know. It's just chaos there. It's not like they, as you know, it's not anything like it's portrayed. When we had the G8 here, you know, they jerked off about, they spent billions when, what's that fella who runs your country, what's he called, what's his name?
B.O.? Yeah.
Oh, that's the one. And was it Gorbachev? And all these silly twats are lined up for a photo opportunity, and there's nobody there. There's no one there. And what they've done, they've gone around all the things like this, derelict buildings, and boarded them up and painted, you know, like they used to do with the vans that they took the Jews and gypsies and everyone to the gas chambers. They put them in the what's the tool? I'll have to decline. Hang on, there's one of my comrades. Go away. I'm talking. and you know, they painted the other sides of the vans would have happy people, wouldn't they? And going on a day trip, and they'd be gassing them from the exhaust because they haven't got the gas chambers up together. It's just like that, those kinds of paintings. Pretend shops that didn't, you know, all the way from the airport through to the G8. This was the ironic thing, I thought, was this multi-million pound complex, sports complex and everything else, which was actually bankrupt. Wasn't in use. You know, it was a big, call it a fool's folly or something. Again, another development from English money. And it's happening all the time. And the poverty, the unemployment, the lack of housing in the north, same old.
Have you ever seen that video called The Dots? It's on YouTube.
No, but I certainly will. The Dots.
Yeah, it's about, there's like a little tiny bit of dots, and then there's a massive amount of dots, and all the biggest number of dots let the little bitty number of dots rule them, or basically boss them around, make laws and all that kind of stuff. The point I'm trying to get to is we outnumber the elite and the bankers by the billions, and so it's about time that we start doing essentially what you're doing, speaking up and pointing out everything.
Don't be afraid, because what are they going to do to me, man? Money, madman. What are they going to do to me? Kill me? Shoot me? I don't give a shit. Do me a favour. At least I won't have to lie there eventually, you know, within possibly 18 months, 2 years, lie there in absolute agonies.
And how many times can they hang you and then boil you and then hang you again and put you to the fire? You only die once, so.
They tried with some poor Arab this week, haven't they? He survived the hanging, and they revived him, and they're debating now whether they should hang him. I don't know if he's offensive, I just ain't taking no notice of this stuff anymore.
Well,
it's just
around here, if you take a notion to get beat up, just call the police for their help. If you got some burglar robbing you, you just call the police and you can get beat up.
Oh, yeah, you will. In fact, again, Jim Cannon has this amazing song called Get the Guards. Get the guards! It's fantastic. It's like it's completely lunatic on stage. I did a bootleg video of him in the Spirit Store in Dundalk the early part of this year when I was just got me colostomy back fitted.
Did you ever watch a Benny Hill show?
Yeah.
There's one really funny episode on there that I love. This guy, he's in his apartment, everything's all quiet, and he's wandering around trying to figure out what it is that he wants to do. And then so he goes over, he turns his little record player on, and not more than a second after he turned his record player on, the cop smashes in the door and beats his record player to pieces with a billy club, and said the neighbors were complaining.
that's happened to me in real. That happened to me in real life. You know, I had the two babies up in the bed, just gone to sleep. We sat there discussing life, the universe, and everything, and thinking, oh, we got through the day, girl, you know. And we put the music on, and I love music, but I put it on very low, and it was kind of a Leonard Cohen-y kind of atmosphere. I was trying to generate a little romance, you know, if I had the strength, if we had the strength left. And the next minute, on the door, the most offensive obese, and I called a pangada, but it's legal now, you can't call them pangadas, and you have to call them garda, and I wouldn't have the respect for her. And she says, do you mind turning it down? I said, I looked around, I couldn't hear it myself, it was at the door. I said, what? She says, your music, the next door neighbour, she said, the next door neighbour's complaining. I said, what that? And I went, that hoor, she's the biggest hoor on wheels, as they say. It's her street, it's her community, no one else's, she terrorises everybody, you know. And she fell out with me, because I just basically, she came into my house, boom, in the back door, and asked for a cigarette at 7 o'clock in the morning. I said, I won't say, would you ever, I haven't got any cigarettes, you know, go. And that was it. By the Christ, she had the whole street after me, you know. But fortunately, you see, I have the street guys, you know, they're all, like, I have the street cred. This was totally unconnected. But she moved out. She got a nice new four-bedroomed house in the estate up the road. And when she'd gone, her brother moved in. And it's nothing to do with me, but I'm there lying in bed at night with my wife trying to get to sleep. And I hear this almighty moaning and screaming and breaking of windows and televisions coming out of the street, and you name it. And I looked out the window, and I've got to be honest, I knew every single one of the lads. They were good lads. Street lads, you know, the local terror, you know, the local terrors, and they just looked on the eye, Jeb. I said, here you are, shut the fucking window, you know. But I did ring her up, which what's actually brought her back to me, you know, she's that grateful. And I said, look, can you get Sean? What's wrong, you know? I said, because his brother is having seven kinds of shite beaten out of him in the house by a dozen guys. Baseball bats, the lot, they're going to kill him and his boyfriend, so you better get over quick. And there was like a riot squad coming over, but by which time they'd gone, it took an hour and a half for the police to turn up from 300 yards round the corner. That's what I like. Yeah.
From 300 yards?
Yeah. I'm shouting, I'm excited, and it's great talking to you guys. Yeah. It really is. It's such a relief.
They're never there when you need them, but they are. They're never there when you want them, but they're always there when you don't.
Yeah, I mean, I've been honest and open about everything. I've been under siege in my own home in Kit Hill. It was when I was an alcoholic, and I had no idea I was ill. And I was under siege for 7 hours, and 15 riot police, all about 21 to 24, eventually got into me. And I was 50, for my 50th birthday, and I dropped four of them in the armoured suit. I put all of the heavy pine furniture down and the stairwell on them. And they dragged me out. I'm 50. I've got my children in the house, which I managed to get out. There's a back entrance. Get out quick. They went. And a few days later, my house was covered in my blood.
Yeah. Man.
From all the walls. I had a broken jaw. I had a dislocated shoulder, which they left. I had a punctured lung, and they threw me headlong down the fucking stairs, and they could have broke my neck, which was their intention. And when I woke up on the street naked, and this 25 stone copper kneeling on me and hitting me and saying, I'm going to get you 20 years or something, you bastard, you know.
So whatever happened to serve and protect?
Right, come on. I'll send you a link of a video I did, and it's called Daddy Does the Raw. Right? It's classic. You know,
I think I saw that video. You shared it with me some time back.
Oh, right. Yeah, well, that one. That's gone viral, you know. And And I got an invite to join with another group of men's, you know, activists, single rights thing at the weekend. And this is brilliant. I thought I'm taking off, you know. And this guy is very articulate. He's the kind of guy that would know all the I'm an artist, basically, you know, end of story. And I am an artist, end of story. And an activist and a lot of other things. But this guy knows his onions, as they say, you know, everything about legislation. He's tackling the UN Convention or something. Anyway, he's telling me all that. And I'll send you the link. It's on my site, but I'll send you the link. And on Tuesday night, on Today FM, they're interviewing him and the politicians. They're bringing him in to say, we're demanding now, come on. The demographic has changed in Ireland. It's time you acted. You know, there's so many single parent fathers. There's so many this, there's so many that. No one's getting married. The whole thing's changed in the last 25 years. But it's on, if you like, prime time, nationwide radio, which is au fait estate, but no, I think it's, I can't remember. But anyway, they're au fait with all this kind of thing. And they invite people on, and you can speak on national radio. And I think that's a hell of a way to come for all of us. For us, you know, we're linked with the mad crowd in England that dress up as Superman and all that, and climb on Buckingham House, Buckingham Palace, and all that kind of thing. And they dress up as bishops and go into bishops' conferences. And it's half an hour before they recognise they're not bishops. Then they start protesting. One of them went into the art gallery and destroyed this amazing pictures worth billions, you know, that kind of stuff. But we don't do that. They do that in England, and I have to applaud them. They've got some balls.
What do you guys say we take a quick break here? And
there's some music.
Yeah, I got the perfect song for you, Kelly. All right, you guys hang on. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table on No Borders, Wake Radio, and Shaziz Radio, and We Roar, and multiple other networks. So stay tuned, people. Peace and love.
This is
All my friends around the world and No Borders and Awake Radio and We Roar, you're listening to Shazoo's Radio, and Got old King Shaziz the Terrible, my honorable knights Jeff Kelly and Muddy Mudman on here, and we're just talking about all kinds of things in the world that's kind of messed up. It's my firm belief that with love we can overcome anything, and each individual out there is more powerful than they can possibly imagine. Jeff's been through a whole lot in his life. He's suffered a lot of health problems, and no matter what, he's always stayed the path to what he truly believes in. And so with that said, it's an important thing that you believe in yourself as well, because it's not going to be any representation from any government around the world. We've already seen their track record. Their track record is bombs and guns and jails and regulations, laws and rules, everything to oppress the man, you know, herd the people into the cities and tax them to death or poison them or whatever, you know. You've heard all the conspiracies, you've heard all the deals, all the evidence is on the table. It's all up for you to step back, look at the big picture, and decide where it is that you want to go from there. And the best example of what I'm talking about is Jeff Kelly here. He's, like I said, he's been down the road, but he still stays the course. We got Muddy on here. He's a good-hearted individual. He's been down the road himself, and he could tell you a few things. How you doing there, guys?
I'm just listening to your accolade, man. I'm just embarrassed. You know, it's like
embarrassed?
Yeah, I'm not used to that. It's usually, hey, Kelly, come here. Get off the street. Yeah.
Well, brother, you know, I've known you for quite some time. We kind of stumbled upon each other for a bit, and after, you know, talking to you, and we got to know a little bit about one another, and listening to the stories, and you know, you've been down a hard road, but what inspires me?
That's part of the course. That's life.
Yeah, I understand that. We've all been down that, but the people out there. The average Joe needs to know that they're not powerless by any means. I mean, if after everything you've been down through and everything Muddy's been through, and we're actually here on the radio and we're talking to all these people around the world, you know, that's testament of what, you know, not giving up is all about. Am I wrong?
Absolutely. When I try to help people deal with the outset of cancers and that kind of thing, you know, various sort of fundraisings I might have yet, but before I got too bad, I would do a presentation. I'd be invited to, and they'd make it sit at a certain table, you know, and it would be the Beaumont Hospital, or it might be St. Luke's with the hospices, and I was getting all the stuff, and you have these little labels, you know, and people who are going to the Beaumont would come over to you. It's like school induction, you know, and I said, it's not this for a game of soldiers. And I said to the woman, this particularly beautiful woman, and very, very, very supportive, and they do voluntary driving and everything to take patients to the, you know, for me, it was, I had to do a, almost, what was it, what's it talking about? 150 kilometre round journey at the start of the treatment, having the chemotherapy and the radium. I have to have the chemo in one hospital on one side of Dublin, and then go to the far side of Dublin and have the radium. And I'll just give you an example of the severity of mine. It was combined for a start. And I was 17 stone, and I kept fit, because I was always getting attacked by people like the police and stuff. So I was about 17 stone, and I was handsome looking man 2 years ago, believe it or not. No one ever put me past the age of 40, but that's a family trait. My mother she was the most beautiful young looking corpse I've ever seen at like 67, you know what I mean, not a wrinkle on her, and except she started going blue, so I had to put more makeup on her. I said, sorry mum, you know, and I put all the makeup on her. She made me promise to do that. I love the bones of her, although in our early relationship I didn't see her from beyond 11 till 30. But I loved and I understood, and I drew her back, and I drew my father back before he died, and I got him out of a mental hospital, and he says, why did you come, son? I said, what do you mean, my dad? I love you. You have to remember one thing. You left us, but we never left you. And he just broke. That whole year, those years just came out. And within 3 days, I had him out of there. I went into the hospital because I knew it. And I knew the guys that were there in the cook. And I just saw the guy behind the glass, you know, like, it's just like one flew over the cuckoo's nest, you know. And I went in there and I said, and he said, oh, God, Jeff Callaghan. I said, yeah, it's me. I said, you know my reputation, don't you? And I just went right up to his face and I says, you touch one, that's my friend that's in the glass. I said, you touch one hair of his fucking head in your ear, I'll come back and I'll blow your fucking brains out, right? I'll be back. And I, just like Arnie, you know. And I went, everybody showed me down, big hug, I said, I'll be back, don't worry. And I went and arranged a private institution for him, and he recovered, you know, instantly almost. And he lived to 83, and unfortunately I couldn't get to the funeral in England. He had a sudden stroke, and they rang me, his stepped up, and I'm like my stepsisters, are you coming, Jeff, you know, relying on me? And I said, I'm sorry, I just cannot come, I'll just tell my love him. And he died. The thing is, they couldn't get to the hospital, and he died alone. And just the mortuary attendants and whatever. And that's always been my vision of hell. That's my vision of hell, is dying alone. And that's my biggest trauma. And this is what I was trying to tell people in the hospital about. You get alienated. The illness itself will alienate the nearest and dearest. All this crap you hear about the cancer societies and the charities and all this stuff. I asked them, I said, I don't know any patient in the hospital that I've met, and I over 2 years, and I've met hundreds and hundreds who ever received a penny off these cancer societies, believe it or not. Wow. And the amount of funerals I went to while I was in the hospice, and we'd every joke, and for some reason we would be going to the gravesite, nobody there, no family, no anything, you know. And
that's sad.
And we just spent the weekend, as I say, where's Paddy, where's Mochi? He's in the dining room. Oh, fuck. One weekend, we lost four. They were sat like as healthy as you and me, talking like this. And down they went. Boom, gone. And we were at the funerals, and they said, whose turn is it next? And I says, you know, whose turn is it? We're looking down the line, in the wheelchairs and the sticks and everything, and all these guys with no voice boxes. I was in a ward with 8 guys that had no voice box, and I was like a little messenger boy, you know. Christianity sings messenger boy bringing my love to you, you know. When I was a child, I used to run messages for people, so I was running messages around the fucking ward. But I had my combat sock, I had my big kick-ass boots, I had Old Navy t-shirt, I had my combat hat, and they called me Captain anyway, you know, from ages ago. And I'm running around and I say, oh, for Christ's sake, It's the 2:30, you know, this Kempton, right, okay, you know. And then I go to the next one. Ah, oh, it's worn out, and it distracted me, and it made them laugh, you know, these poor guys. And I said to the matron one day, is that going to be me next week? He says, yes, oh no, Jeff, fortunately it's different, but, you know, be prepared, like. And I thought, even if I lose my voice, I started, when I was getting ill, I started making radio show.
Yeah, we're getting some echo back there.
I'll shut up then, because I'll be quiet for a moment.
Buddy, you still there?
Oh yeah, I'm here. I didn't hear a bit of echo.
Did you hear me?
Oh, I hear you wonderfully.
Oh, because it's like a squeaky mouse when I hear it. A little squeaky mouse. Well, I'll be able to sneak into the barracks tonight, won't I?
Did somebody get the radio on?
Shit all over the garden, over the garden sergeant's desk. He won't know, and I'll get out, sneak out. But that's the way of it. And cut a long story short, it's about dealing with fear and diet. The two major things I noticed over those 2 years was dealing with the fear and empowering yourself. And, you know, I was in the ward. I said, excuse me, are you talking about me? This is the big consultant and everything. He says, yes, Jeffrey. I said, well, do you mind coming over here and talking to me? That's my life you're discussing. I want to be involved. If I'm going to die, I want to be involved in it. If I'm going to live, I want to be involved in it. And they paid attention. And I was there for months. And when they finally discharged me, not home, because I was, you know, to another place to get more treatments, they come to me collectively and thank me. And they said, very honestly and openly, Jeff, is there anything else we need to do? And I said, no, thanks. I said, I just want to thank you all guys for being there for me. And he said, it's been a pleasure. And I see these guys now still 2 years down the line, you know. And that's what I try to instill in people. don't be frightened. And a good friend of mine, I'll tell you, taught me that lesson, was a good friend of mine called Mike Smith, and he's been through a thousand times more perhaps than I would admit to. And very active, very prominent. He is a celebrity and deservedly so. And he goes all around the world lecturing and creating, and he supports the arts. He does everything. He's a beautiful man. I love him also. I always have fun. And you know, it's just, even he's marginalised, you know. And talking about all this negative shit, it drags me down. So I whip back up. Forget that. I just, Mannix invited me to his play, performance of a play called James X. And in it, he's looking at the audience, but he's looking specifically at me. And what he's doing is, he's trying to open me up, and he's trying to empower me. And he's saying, it's not about survivor, it's not about victim, it's about ownership. You take ownership of the abuse, you take ownership of your one life. That's what he's trying to get through in his play. And I tell you, that lesson was like, it was like the hand of God. It seared through my brain, and I took ownership. Warts and all. That's why I can openly say to you, I was under siege with the guards. That's why I can say I was an alcoholic. That's why I can say I was this, I was that, or the other. And as Bob Dylan says, I've already confessed. I don't need to confess again. So, just F off. Read my cancerous lips, I'll tell the guards. And on that particular first eviction, I asked every guard, I said, excuse me, I was recording them and taking pictures. Can anyone tell me who said, just after lubricate, because see the difference, I've no way, that's maybe pop bottle just about to explode. And those saliva ducts, all burnt away, and never come back. And I said, can anyone tell me, it was all nice and quiet and friendly for a while, till we started to get angry. Can anyone tell me who said, I'm going to Sheer Corner, will succeed, not by numbers or force of arms, but by the moral authority of the people? Now, who said that? Do you know that?
No, I have no idea.
They didn't. And one of them guessed, Michael Collins? No. You know, Charles Dickens, anybody, Mickey Mouse? Sorry, man. No. The first commissioner of Angadashir, it wasn't actually called Angadashir Khan at that point, but it was the fledgling, the first after the revolution. I don't call it an uprising, revolution. it was the first commissioner of police, the boss. But the thing is, he was, again, a Western man. He was Sligo. And I don't think it was Sligo. He was in Sligo, mate, just on the borders kind of thing. A lovely man. I use him, his image. And he's a lovely man, and he was a quartermaster general at the GPO, the Rising, and all this kind of stuff. And he formed the first, you know, Irish police, as against the British police that they had before. but he only lasted 7 months. That's the point. That's my point. He lasted 7 months. They got rid of him, you know, because he come up with that kind of start off. That the only way we will succeed is through the moral authority of the people. And that's how I see it. That's exactly what it is today. And that's the only way they will win us over, if you like. They are meant to be, it's not like your police forces in America and various other places. Ours is called Angadashir Khan. And it means just simply guardians of the peace of Ireland. And that's what it's meant to be. They're our servants. They are meant to, as you say, when you call them out, protect us. They don't. They come out now in riot gear, and they beat the shite out of you. They put you in chains, and they're the most ignorant, as it says on the Daddy Does the Raw, the most violent people in the country. And they're all bloggers. Now, that's not...
That's a legalized street gang's what it is.
Yeah, the state's private security man, dressed up and fancied. You know, that's all they are. Everybody knows that, but everyone's afraid to say it.
Well, we're not afraid to say it. What do you think, buddy?
You would be here. You would. No, I'm not. We're not.
Yeah, it sounds 100 times worse there than I experienced here.
Can I just say, when I run up against the government with the broadcasting thing, and they say they're stupid, they send you out. They're stupid. They send you out emails. And they, oh my God, thank you God, there is a God. And I get that email and I cut and paste, you know, what they say. And I got threats from the local newspapers and everybody. I should have been, we send you these emails in confidence, you know, blah, 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 blah. I said, I don't, look, there's two things I don't do, is tell lies and keep fucking secrets. Yeah, so fuck off. And then I published all I was publishing all their emails they sent to me. Because they're all like trying to draw me into the establishment, you know. So, and the thing is, Eamon Ryan wrote to me, Dear Geoffrey, I as minister, I should know off my heart, I as minister have no role to play in the day-to-day running of a radio station. And I put, well, who does? you know, what's his bloody name? Dennis O'Brien. you know, all that man, he'd be the biggest charlatan on the planet. He owns 3/4 or whatever of the communications industry in Ireland, and he goes to all the vulnerable countries like Malaya and the Philippines, and he donates millions of our money to the Vatican City, and he's a charlatan. He doesn't even live in the country, yeah. And he's there up with the government. He's getting contracts worth billions, and this kind of thing. And it all stems, and I'll say it now on air because it's provable. They've had a tribunal for 10 years or more, and the Mahan trial. Who's the Mahan? You know? And these tribunals, which they tried to say, oh, they're too expensive, we shan't have them. But they came up with the findings that he and the broadcast minister at the time colluded, and they gave him the first broadcasting mobile license. That's how he got his money. But the money, his stake, came from Bertie Ahern's bottom drawer in the drunk on the mafia. He never, the T-shirt didn't have, he was in a bed sitting above the office. That's what they're like. It's a gang. The gang's all here, you know. And that's what he did. He took out the drawer, he'd give him something like 50 grand, and because Bertie Ahern was in league with these Manchester Irish businessmen, and they give him money and all kinds of money. Oh, it's all in the report. I'm not just making it up. Read the report. It's years long, pages long. I've read it all. They're a bunch of hooers, you know, hooer on wheels, as we say. And they get away with it. And they're coming in from the cold now. The Green Party, what's his name, Ryan, is trying to get in on the Dublin Council. You know, pathetic, you know. It's bring him in, he'd be all right on the council, you know, a few grand. But he's only got about 100 members left in the Green Party. And the thing is, I just laugh all the time. And I put it up there constantly. And the point is here. The point is here. He told me, he recommended that I go to the... If I had a problem with paedophilia...
That's funny, no?
That's not the CIA. Paedophilia in Dundalk, I should go to the appropriate authorities. So I took his advice. I went to the barracks. And who am I speaking to? But not then. Later on, a twice convicted the death sergeant, the sergeant that I was talking to, and he was convicted twice for opportuning not only children, but babies from a Dublin prostitute. He's just got out of jail now, and he's roaming the streets. Man. So there you go. Where do the children go if they need, when they're being raped and abused in the home? Just like, you know, Jerry Adams is full. You know, I do believe you're not my brother's keeper, but if you are a trusted politician, and you are, in a sense, I'm disappointed in him more than anything. He's the most feared, if you like. He's a true Republican. He's all those things. He's a wonderful author. He's a wonderful orator. He's a really nice guy, you know. And the same as for all the bad press Martin Guinness gets. You know, he's a killer and all this. You know, like he said, I was at his president lunch, you know, in Dundalk, and he says, you come out of your house at 17 years of age and you find that your street, your home, the community is on fire, being burnt out by the loyalists. What are you going to do, John? And it's so true. What's he going to do? So you can't blame him. He lost friends, family over the years. You see, what people think is that because you're a Republican, you know, you have this, that you're a Republican, You're a dissident. I'm an overt dissident. I say that all the time. I don't wear masks. I don't do masks. My face is all over the fucking internet. I love it, you know. Yeah. I'm an actor. I'm everything. I'm an artist. You name it. My friend Maddie Arts in Montreal says, she calls me a transgenic. She said, they didn't cure you of cancer, Jeff. You did. You just dispensed with the old body and got a new one. And it's just so right. Spiritually, she's so right. And she did she does these paintings. He just add a Maddie Art. Beautiful film. But anyway, that's going off the track. But these are the creative things that make you change. And when you faced with, they told me when I was diagnosed, you've got 6 weeks to live, Jeff. That's what they said 3 years ago. 6 weeks to live. And I'm still terminal, I'm still stage four, there's nothing more they can do. And if they want to use a knife on me, which I won't let anywhere near me, because they'll have to take half my face off, my shoulder, and most of my upper part of my body when it comes back.
Man.
So I will just do the, you know, I will not jump in the river, I'll probably strap, not take some Semtex up from somewhere because there's lumps around. I walk into the door when they're all debating, when they're all having a massive debate. I'll say, come on guys, we're all going to heaven just like Father said.
When folks talk about the New World Order conspiracy to basically eliminate the population, the average Joe looks at them like they're crazy. But listening to all the different things that we've heard today and that we already know, it to me, there's a whole lot of suppressed technology out there. There's a lot of suppressed medicines out there. The Food and Drug Administration over here can get things passed through that the side effects are worse than the doggone disease itself. And so
you wouldn't give them to a dog.
Yeah. So yeah. With
the
that
stuff
said,
in maize, I've got pictures. I'll show you. It's got toxic. Stay clear. My blood. When I was being, I'm toxic. I'm carcinogenic.
Instead of killing somebody's immune system with chemotherapy, why can't they try some of these alternate drugs that are used in other countries that aren't allowed here or there or wherever?
Marijuana.
You know what I'm saying?
Like marijuana. You know, Paddy Doyle is an author. He's brilliant. You remember the film My Left Foot with, Christy Brown, I think, The Man Around Town. It was a famous film. And famous actor, Christy Brown, who had the same, more or less the same condition. And Paddy has spent most of his adult life, his childhood adult life, in a wheelchair. And you'll often see, just put Paddy Doyle, author, in Ireland. And there's pictures of him when he was a little boy, a little baby, and he's in charge of the nuns. And the thing was, his maltreatment by them resulted in this horrific degenerative disease of the nervous system. And he lives his life in a wheelchair and he can't get it. He gets out, he'll crawl on the floor to make a cup of tea. He will not allow anybody. He's that independent still. And you think I'm brave? I don't think I am. This guy is brave, you know. And he campaigns. He's been campaigning for 20 odd years. But just one of the small campaigns is legalizing marijuana in the Republic for medicinal purposes, you know, for his kind of condition, pain relief, this kind of thing. And if nothing else, I suppose, just to take your mind off it before you die, you know, enjoy yourself a little bit.
Oh, well, yeah, if you already know you're there's no hope according to the doctor, yeah. what would it hurt for you to have it yourself if you needed it, you know?
Oh, now they'll say, oh, Kelly's a drug dealer now, you know, he's around children, they do all kinds of shit. You know, and what do I need permission for to grow a few seeds in my back garden or in my shed or whatever the fuck you want, up in your loft, hide it in a cupboard? No, just stick it on the mantelpiece. If they come and arrest you, what are they going to do? What are you going to do? You're not going to lock me up because there's no room in the prison.
Going to throw you in jail for life?
Yeah, or kill me. But I'll wipe your ass all over the web, you know. I'll have people taking photographs of it when they're dragging me out, because I will not go like I wouldn't go when they were trying to get into my sovereign, violent home, even though I was a bloody alcoholic. It's not my fault the local sergeant jumped out of the doorway having a sneaky fag. and I did. I was paralytic, but it wasn't because I was a drunk. I just celebrated possibly the first IT company in Cavan. That's what happened, and I had staff. I had everything. I was being a no. It's too much. I got it's a bit like today. I got all this praise. Thank you. Oh, Jesus! Just get. We'll have a drink. I've employed you. You know, you do the work now. You know, and I went off, and I said, I've got to get home. You know, and I just went off. I was thinking, Christ, you're doing so well, Jeff. Curly, what Curly? And Catilly's not a friendly place at night at 3 o'clock in the morning. And I just saw this shadow, you know, like shadowmonger, as I call them, coming out of the shadows. And I can do the Kirby. I always did the Kirby kiss, as they call it in Liverpool. It's a nutter, you know. You nut, bang, down you go. And that's what I did. And I kicked him in the head to make sure he stayed down. And then I saw this fucking big green, this big green thing on his back saying, "No, Yada." Oh, and I saw the stripes, you know. Oh shit! I just stepped over him. I got home. I didn't rush. I walked home. I said, "We're going to have visitors. Get the kids out. What's up?" I said, I just had an encounter with the third kind with Angara Shikloni, as you know, we call them, we don't use them, you know. And the next minute, that, you know, as I say, it took an hour and a half for this other guy to get attention. It was 5 minutes before 15 riot squad, you know, flashing lights. It was just like a movie. I was loving it. I was stone drunk. I went upstairs in the...
Uh-oh, we got a lot of static going on there.
That's definitely, it's either alien or it's the CIA. One of the two, MI5 probably. Or aliens. I was right, aliens, isn't it?
Well, we have a deal here on Shaziz Radio that anytime that we feel like they're listening in on us, we like to say hi to them, you know. So, hello, FBI, yeah. CIA, DEA, TSA, how y'all doing?
My website, I got control. The cult that had them, you know, Naval. Do you know about? I mean, you know about America, obviously. But the only thing I know about America is The Last Detail. You know, with Jack Nicholson, beautiful movie, and it's a great movie. And you know that big naval base on the west, on the east coast, is it? West coast, you know, California, and it's portrayed in it's an intelligence center for the naval intelligence, and I have them following me. On my statistics, I have Russia following me. I've shut the site down now. I'm going to revamp it and bring it up. But oh God, everywhere, China, Russia, all these, and I see all these different, because they can't hide their trails, but I can say I can go backtrack them, and I sent them emails saying, "Hi guys, don't know anything. If you want to know anything, just ask me."
Yeah, that's what we're saying. We're giving the information away for free, so come over, we'll give you a copy.
Yeah, you know, what I say is they're out. This is going out. I want it to go out. I'm hoping it will empower somebody and say, guys, you know, those three guys have got some balls, you know, and non-genderized balls, of course, because we have a great, you know, testicles. But I'll tell you something. My clan, Clankia, you know, the Kelly family. It's not Kelly Clan family because it's not a group in it. We're warriors, you know. This is our territory. Kelly's, stems from the borders right the way down to Roscommon and that. We were kings for hundreds of years. You know, I've got the history, and I'm part of that history, and my family's part of that history. And the graveyard is full of my family. And the graveyard where I'm going, my final home. I've got all my ready-made videos. I go up there and see my mum, and I'm the sort that would put the video camera on other gravestones of my family and film myself walking through, like I'm like this ghostly thing, black and white edition. But it was a heartfelt thing I did, so I wasn't aware of that. It only became a film. But I stitched in three tunes from Cass Evans, Lord, My Body. Has been a good friend, and I won't need it when I read the end and all that sort of stuff. Tea for the Tillerman, it works beautifully, and it has me walking in like live as I'm like I'm carrying the coffin. So it all by myself, and it's brilliant. And I think so. A lot of people think it's brilliant. I loved it. It was a tribute to my family, and I went around, photographed all the 3, 4, 5, 6 generations of people in the graveyard. And when I go up there, I feel at home. I'm going home. I'm not dying. I'll eventually have to go home. But I'll be glad to go home because I'll be weary. I'll be tired. I want to sleep. I want to rest in my eternal home, whatever that's going to be.
Well, brother, nobody can ever in good conscience say that in your lifetime you didn't put up a heck of a fight.
Absolutely. And I'll go when I'm good and ready. As I said, back to my father, my biggest fear from that is that I would die alone. And when I was kicked out, I was discharged from the hospital, onto the street, by the way, from intensive care unit, with a barring order, with 40 euros in my pocket. That's it.
Well, you know something? On your fear about dying alone, don't give that any thought, because even though we may not be able to be standing there right beside you, we're there by in heart, you know? And
I'm
so,
ahead of you. I'm ahead of you, bro. Listen to what I've done. I'm ahead of you. That's what was happening when I came back to Malaga. I was so, you know, alone. I was
The question is, all said and done, would you trade any minute of your life?
No, I wouldn't change a thing. It's life, it's experience, and I'm fortunate to be intelligent. I left school unable to read and write. I wouldn't talk because I've been raped at 9. I went, you know, like comatose, you know, like condition, but I didn't. They thought I did. And they made out I was intellectually a retard. They called me a retard, an intellectual retard. I wasn't. I was an emotional retard. And what I did, I used that as a defense mechanism. From 9 years old to 11, I didn't speak to anyone. I didn't speak to teachers. I ignored everything. And they put me down as, I thought, this is cool. They put me down as an intellectual retard. So nobody bothered to bother with me, you know. Please, sir, Kelly's trying to throw me off the roof again. You know, that. And the thing was, I was. You know, I had no problem. I was just looking up. And I was very big for my age. I just walked out of the classroom and so lean. I just walked up to docks and play with, you know, the stevedores and pretend I was a sailor and all that. And all that kind of mad stuff. But it brought me to a point at 14 that I left, you know, my hometown and got on a train. I was helped from an Irish guy that took it off his. I put a handful of coin, you know, and I find myself in London. And there's a Pogue song. I was only 19 or so, only 16 when I got to London. I was 14 when I got to London for the first time. I was a big lad. And the thing is, I got there because for the first time Daddy did the roar. Jeffrey, little Jeffrey, stood up for the first time, nearly 6 foot fucking tall at 14, and did the roar. And nutted three bricks, you know, bang, bang, bang. Down they went, stepped over, just like the guard, and on the train. And the thing was, I didn't even realise they had the uniform on. You know, like the boy, they made a film, Brendan Behan, the Boston Boy. These buggers plagiarised my life. You know, that was my life. Except it wasn't Boston, it was what they called an approved school. Yeah. And I was gone. Right out of Aqueduct, London, Murphy's, everything. And never looked back. You know, like... But don't look back or something. I never did, but I've always found my way home, and he never. He's only just recently found his way home.
So what would you call the biggest? What would you call the biggest accomplishment?
Being able to talk to you guys, and you to listen. I'm going to cry tonight.
Thanks.
Just so you know, I'm not.
Oh, I'm honored to talk to you and all that stuff.
Don't say that. No, we're brothers. We've met on the road. You know, we're just, instead of passing by on the road to Damascus, you guys came over to me. I'm the guy in the gutter. You know what I mean?
Well, you know something, brother.
And that's it.
There's in life, there's people, there's doers, and there's people that just sit on the fence. And you're one of the folks that you know, actually got out there and done something about, you know, your beliefs. And that's why, you know, empowering all the other people out there, the listeners, and I keep saying, and I repeat it, and I'll keep on repeating it, that you're more powerful than you can possibly imagine. And there is things that you can do to make the world a better place. You know, adversity.
Can I just say, I'll answer your question now, all right. My biggest achievement in life, it's only one. But that's the creation of our children.
And how, brother?
And the fact is, you know, I'm sure you both are Woody Woody Madman. Yeah, that's better. Woody Woody Madman, we'll call you. And Shanzi's, I know Shanzi's has his clan. And I have many. That's my heritage. That's my longevity. I'll live forever through my children. They're beautiful children. They're creative. Every single one of them. My grandson does animation. You know, everybody. My daughter has had a business now for over 20 years of fashion design, and it's thriving, and she has to help from no one. She's just like a daddy. And
well, brother, our children...
These fuckers, excuse my French, but the state and the church and whoever and all the toxic people in our society here and abroad and in England have all gathered together to stop that one thing that for the last 2 years I've not been able to touch, feel, took my children, my two youngest, into bed at night, tell them a story, reassure them, pick up their wounds. I was living on an estate in Dundalk, they come running in one night and some guy has been shot dead in front of them. And I was dealing with that. I do a blog, Mitzi Bushy Boys against the dying old man of Saltown. And at one time, as my partner relied on me to do that, so did the Minister of Justice and the property developer of the estate that I was on. And he asked me to help form the this new law was coming in to empower, social residents with committees, and I set all that up. And then what I found was I withdrew from it immediately because all the people who were voting onto the committee were the mothers and fathers of the little, Mitsubishi kids, the little tykes, the ones who... I took a series of 100 photographs with my telescopic lens of this asshole 16-year-old blonde, red-headed kid. And no one likes red-headed kids in it. From Dublin, a problem kid. And he had a gang breaking into all the houses, dealing with a northern drug dealer and on the estate. And I photographed them not doing any of that at the back of the house in the field, dealing and smoking, having joints. The red-headed fella was sniffing cocaine, various things. And all these kids are all under 16 and the minimum is 8. I go up to the guards with it, I have no problem with that. And I give them the drug squad, I give them the copies of the, I kept the originals because I don't know what to do with them. And I give them the originals and I never heard back at all. Now, the two guys I've been caught for, there's a bench warrant out on me for the last year. That's because of a fault of my pathetic bloody solicitor who's in, as you say, I'm writing this ongoing book called The Misery Industry, and it's all about the courts, the family courts, the way it's a game play, the courts. It's just deal and bargain. And the last time I went in, the judge wanted to do a deal with me and I said no, and I went out and I wrote a blog about it. I told the world that the judge had tried a deal, and the next minute my good friend in Dundalk, my mail dropped on the doorstep this morning. He said, "It looks official, Jeff." I said, "Just open it. If they want money, bin it. If it's real, bin it. I don't want to know." And then just read it out. He said, "Hey, hang on." He snapped it and sent it off to Facebook. Now that went on Facebook, and it was a, "Dear Jeffrey, this is my solicitor. Blah blah blah. You didn't turn up at court. All this kind of shit. There's a now bench warrant out for you and all that." It's up on my blog. I don't think I'll put it out this week. And this is the beauty of it. This is how good I am. I said, "This is bollocks." I gave all my details. I had moved up. Everybody in the world knows I'm in Ballinair, for Christ's sake. And my solicitor doesn't, because he didn't bother his ass to inform the court, because it's part of that setup. Sean T. O'Reilly, I don't mind saying his name, because I'll take him out of the street like you. Fisticuffs. Front of the fucking courthouse before I go in. An asshole, and the pretty Angela, who's supposedly defending me so that I can get access to my children. And then I went, this is about. They've only done, they've waited on that charge right the way to the limit of charging me. And it was 3 days before I was going into court to get access and custody, not custody, access and, you know, whatever, to my two babies. And so I would end up going into court with a criminal record, the assault against children, kind of children, you know, teenagers, for Christ's sake, accused of giving them both a bitch slap when I was protecting, there's a law that you can protect your property. They were on my property without invite, that assaulted my daughter, you know, that she was burgeoning, you know, a young woman, and they were grabbing her. You can imagine, I won't go into any details. And I was up in the kitchen, and I had a feeding tube hanging out my stomach. My lips were swollen, bleeding my throat. I couldn't talk. I was 7.5 stone, and she helped me down, hysterical, helped me down the stairs. And there they are. Get them. I won't tell you what I've done. Get out. And, but the thing is, under law, I can't be charged on my property. But they still insisted, the Director of Public Prosecution still insisted on charging me with common assault. Now, I've been there, that was over 2 years, I was going regularly. They were adjourning the court. Even the judge himself said, he says, Mr. Kelly, he called me back, you know, first time, because I collapsed when I stood up. And it wasn't because I was ill, it's because I've been sat on a wooden bench for 3 hours, and my arse had gone frozen, and I fell off my stick. So it was not very dramatic, and I made the police very, everyone was on my side. And the judge even called me back, he says, Mr. Kelly, I'd just like to thank you, and you do understand that you have to return on such and such a day. I do, Your Honour. And he says, I want to wish you the very best with your health. You know, because he knew I was terminal. I said, thank you, I'm very much appreciated. And the guards helped me out. One young man, a beautiful guard, he ran over and got me a chocolate. And so I did. And he says, don't move from there. When you feel better, I'll run you home in a squad car. And then those guys sort of smile and say hello to me. You know, all that kind of stuff. So I end up with a bench warrant under immediate arrest if they catch me. I'm 200 yards from the guard of barracks, and I go past every day and I wave to the guys and they're getting used to me. No one's interested in that. No, they're loud police. We're not interested in that, Jeff. One of them said, contemptible stuff, you know. And the thing is, I want them to arrest me. I want them to come here because I have the perfect excuse for not going into court. You know what that is?
What's that?
I was on the operating table in Castle Bar at the exact time in an emergency situation, having been there all night, and life and death operation to save my life because my small bowel had fucking burst in the living room here when I was typing.
Oh.
I felt all warm and my stomach burst open, my small bowel. How I didn't die on that one. That was only last March. You've seen the pictures of me. So, and that, so I just can't wait to go to court. Where were you, Mr. Kelly? I was on the operating table in Castle Bar Hospital in a life. I've already got the letters from the doctor and the surgeon and everybody. Yeah. So when are they going to give up trying to get Kelly? And this is all about turning my family against me. My ex went up to the guard barracks 3 days after the barring order and changed her statement and said, I did hit them. And whatever. And encouraged her. You know,
if you're defending your own home and your daughter, that's you know, I would have done the same thing.
If I had been an American like you guys, I would have had a gun and shot the fuckers. End of story, you know. But I'm 7.5 stone. I can hardly lift my arm to swipe at them. And I said, if I did, and I've got no recollection, I was on intensive radium, intensive chemical. You know, intervention. I didn't know where I was. I couldn't even see the door, you know. And I said, right from the beginning, if I did strike them, because I talk with my hands and I gesticulate and, you know, and get them out of here, like that, and if I did catch them, and all they had was a red mark on their cheek.
The question is, where were their parents?
Exactly. Well, I can tell you. I can tell you where the parents were. The one of one kid, the mother, is a local prostitute. She's, the amount of times I've had that kid in my flat and the next door neighbours, and at midnight on the street, and brought him in because he was a friend, when he was little, a friend of my girl's, and he had nobody. and she was, she'd be found by the guards at a pub or outside a pub somewhere at 3 o'clock in the morning, and the kid abandoned. The other one, a little bit of a Bond fella, always cute. He says, the old gentleman, he says, and all this shit. And I had to have some, you know, sort of Sinn Féin and neighbours and that, and they had to stand around to my door to stop this lunatic coming in. They did that, my neighbours, you know, the good mates of mine. And come long story short, a fortnight after this incident, the council put a barring order on him, on his family, and moved him out of the area. Because there was a little, you know, Afro sort of child on the balcony, just moved in, he was 3 years old, no he's not, and he's no nappy on, and he's showing his bum, shaking his bum, and he's on his knees, the willy's out, and ah, the father sees it, goes ballistic. He grabs a lump hammer, you know a lump hammer is a greasy thing, goes over to the house, smashes his way in through the double glazing, goes up stairs, ostensibly to be kill the kid, and he nearly killed the father, the black guy, the black father.
Man.
nothing happened to him, nothing. So that's, I'm being charged with a bitch slap, if you like, of these two children on my property by these two lunatics. And the reason that woman's gone against me, because she thinks she can get compensation on me, because I run her one day, I said, do you mind stop putting that filth through my letterbox? I said, I have no problem you using it, or any adult using it, but I do not want my children to see it. And it's one of those invitations to a party plan, you know, for sex toys and all this kind of stuff. And of course, everyone's enjoying it, but I don't enjoy it when it drops through my letterbox when my children are, you know, whatever, 10 and whatever, 10 and 12. Growing, we don't have a house like that. Our children, when I went up, when my Saoirse, my eldest, was she was lined up on a wall with half a dozen other kids, and this is what happened to her. This little ship up the road, he had a, you know, I don't know much about it, but you would probably be an American, you know, like those ice hockey pucks things, the big hard puck and the ice hockey, you know, the skates and all that. He's practicing, he's lining the kids up, and he's practicing hitting them with the ice hockey puck. His mother's in the doorway, and they're going down one by one. I didn't know any of this. And my girl got it on the back of the head and a fractured skull.
Man.
And she didn't say anything. Melissa, Melissa didn't say a thing. You know why? Because Daddy would kill them. And they suffered that because they knew. And I wouldn't have done, but that was their biggest fear, was that Daddy would get into trouble. You see what I mean? My child could have died of a hemorrhage, a brain hemorrhage, or anything. But it's a cracked skull. And she was rushed to the hospital. It wasn't that serious. But she fainted, and she collapsed, and all that stuff. And I went up to the guards, made a complaint, and he basically said, it's all in the Mitsubishi thing. He says, you know, Jeff, you know, because I'm like Jeff, you know. The trouble is, he says, you're a family that keeps themselves and you contribute to the community, and they see you going off to college every day. You know, my ex is doing a PhD and I was at the college and everything, and your children are smartly dressed and well-mannered and not out on the streets after 7 or 8 o'clock, unless it's light in the summer. That kind of thing. And you see you going off on day trips and your friends coming in, and he says, I advise you keep yourself to yourself and just get on with it. And I says, oh, that's it, is it? That was it. He says, well, to be honest, Jeff, even I wouldn't go around there. It's a bit like Jinx Lannister saying, even the guards go around there in purrs, you know, come around in purrs, you know. And that's exactly what it was like on Salt Town in Dundalk. Shootings, pistol whippings, drug dealing, three bottles, you name it. You know, there was...
Sounds like a war zone.
Yeah, but when you look at it, these apartments are worth 250,000 euros. That's like the minimum. It's a posh estate, and once they put social housing in, and those kinds of people in, with no discipline, no law, no self-respect, they trash everything. And when I moved, this is the ironic thing, when I moved to my new apartment on the other side of town, there was a look beautiful. I fell instantly in love with it. Right, I know you can't. I had one from the doctor from the Louth Hospital. And she talked to me straight away, and she was absolutely, I met some parents to come over, and I got friends with her, you know, putting aside any, you know, notions of romanticism. And beautiful family, beautiful woman, training here to be a doctor. And I said, oh, you know, where were you living before? She says, oh, it's dreadful, Saltown. I said, yeah, come in. You know, she had me up to her apartment. She made, you know, like they do in the Middle East, they make lovely little cups of things and a little plate with fruit and various and little finger bowls and what, you know, beautiful reception for the first time. And very trustworthy when you think about it. She's Muslim and everything. I'm coming in. Now, every respect for him. We had the longest chat. And it turns out the same little gang of shits are the ones who forced her to leave Saltown into the ironically in the apartment above me. You know, that's just, I shut up on that. That's just the way it is here. Everyone's asleep. Everyone's blind. Everyone looks the other way. My next door neighbour 3 days ago had a stroke. He's 76, no one gives a shit. He's got two brothers, one of them's as bad, and the other fella is worn out looking after them. He's only marginally younger, but he's still got his health, and he's still smart. He goes out there, I see him every morning, 7 o'clock, shopping, bringing it back, rushing here, rushing there. He's the one that'll drop dead, and we all try and help him. But that's the way it is here. I've had no care, aftercare, no public nurses come into my door, nothing in all this time, and it were meant to have everything. And as I say, back to the health minister, this multi-millionaire landowner, he is, just check him out, his finances, he's in the Gazette in London, he's listed as a bankrupt, and now apparently he's settled his affair. What a rabscallion. And he's saying now that cancer patients do not have an automatic entitlement to a medical card. Right, I've got a colostomy bag, which has been on my side now. This is what's killing me. This is why I'm so weak, looking like I'm a bloody skeleton. I can't eat. I don't eat because I don't want to fill the bag. I have to empty the bag every 10 minutes. I have a cup of tea, I'm fucked. You know, it just spills out. And this has been going on since March. And they promised me an operation within 8 weeks to reverse it. Because it was a burst, I survived the trauma, and I've been waiting ever since. So it's March, April, since May, I've been waiting to be called back to the Castlebar Hospital, our local Mayo Hospital General. Well, every month it costs a minimum of €250 to just buy the equipment, if you like, for the bags, for the sprays, for the stop me getting infections, all this kind of stuff, every month. So I work it out. March, April, May, June, July, August, September, October, November. It's getting in there, isn't it? So we're going to, and they said now it's not till next year, so it's going to be a year. So work it, what? I can't add it up. 250 times. 250 quid, 12 times. And they talk about saving money and resources. There's one item, one person out of 4.5 million who is wasting. That somebody worse off than me, one of these people who should be having a medical card, should be, you know, they can have mine. I'd rather give it to them. I'd rather just sew the bloody thing up myself. You know, I took my feeding tube out myself. You know, I said, right. Fuck this. But there it is, having a look in the mirror. It reminded me I had cancer, so I just took it out one night. I thought, I'm going for hell. And it healed up. Fine. The nurse told me that would happen. I wasn't stupid. But, oh my God! You walk around. You try to ask a girl out, or go swimming, or jogging, or you know, a t-shirt on in the summer, and you've got a bloody huge tube, feeding tube, hanging out your stomach, implanted. You know, and there's people, pensioners, like the man next door, had to pay for that. He didn't have a discretion. He never got around to getting a card.
Wow.
You know, and I could go on. We could go on all day. We need a radio station.
We're down to the last 15 minutes of the show. Do you have any good words of wisdom for empowering the individuals out there so you know.
Basically, as Maddox would say, you look at your life and you think what it's been, and you don't try to hide it. Once in all, you take ownership of it and you defend that, because whatever happened to me as a child, you know, as my good friend Gertie says, she's a therapist for the college. Jeff, come here. She got hold of me. Jeff, you were the baby. You were 9 years old. You were 5 years old. You were nine. You were the youngest in the family. And your father went to 5, and your mother went to 11. You were streaking. Come here. She just got hold of me. And that's all I ever wanted in my life. Is a cuddle. I don't want to sleep with people. I don't want to screw around. I just want a genuine person. And I've found that person now. That I firmly believe we were, you know, she's away in America. But I'm not afraid to admit it. Time has gone. I've been waiting at the crossroads for my children. So it's about time they've grown up, and it's about time daddy, if you like, stop doing the raw. There's a beautiful song from The Pale. I shed my father's clothes. I am the butterfly. I shed my father's clothes. That's it. The sins of the fathers no longer falls upon the son. We're not dealing with that kind of crap. It's your life, your one life only, and before long you'll be up in the graveyard alongside me. So what you do is, you turn, instead of coming, looking at the graveyard from Dundalk and Dublin, you come home, as I said, the salmon always returns to the river there that spawned, and you look back then at the capital, you look at Dublin, and you start to see life again from the graveyard, and you go for life. Doesn't matter who you upset, you don't upset them because maliciously, you just, all you want from them is a like, if you see them in life, a hug. And if they say you're a friend, a bit like the cable guy, that they are truly your friend. And you'll defend them forever. And that's what's happened since I came home to Ballinan. The people that have come to me, the ones who have stuck with me, if you like, a bit like Dylan's song, I'm recruiting my army from the orphanages, you know. It's as simple as that. I've survived by the kindness of those people in the past, in recent times, and guys like you, you listen to me and accept what it is that I'm saying. There's no edge. You can tell by the way I'm fucking talking. You know that. You're experienced men of the world. You're far more experienced than I am. I was absolutely impressed when you told me you were former, am I correct? I remember you were former law enforcement officer yourself. Instead of going, oh, shit, run, I thought, what an amazingly brave guy, not because you, in any sense, ended your career for whatever reasons, I'm not interested, but the fact that you actually took that on board with that badge, I'm sure, with that badge on your shoulder saying, I'm going to defend my people, you know, my country, my family.
That's what it's all supposed to be about.
Yeah, that's exactly.
We're getting down to the wire there.
So I hope that answers your question. Just keep on keeping on, guys, and we'll get a radio station that we can all talk for 24/7, and it won't matter.
Yep.
We can all have a radio station.
Well, thanks.
Desktop.
That's right. I shouted from the mountain, and shoutmountain24@gmail.com.
And I promise you this, Jazz, is when I have regained full health, I'm going to the top of Croke Patrick, and I'm going to record that program that I wanted to record when you asked.
Cool.
Right? Yes.
That's where it's going to come from. And anybody can join me on that pilgrimage, if you like. And they'll see me lobbing. They'll see me lobbing the bell, all right. And they'll see me drawing the snakes back into Ireland.
All right, guys.
We got to
wrap this up because got somebody getting ready to take the stream after us. But I appreciate everything and everybody on here. Muddy, you got any last words real quick?
Yeah, shout it from the mountain 24@gmail.com. We do the shout it from the mountain. It's not our radio show, it's yours. It's your, just like Jim Kelly here. He's on the mountain shouting it out. Now, the mountain is all the radio networks and everything out here. And you have the same opportunity. All you got to do is shout it from the mountain 24@gmail.com. Put, make a wave file. Or just type it in there, and I'll read it out on the show. Please, don't pass the opportunity up.
Yeah.
And can I just quickly say, when we've set up Ballinan Community Radio, I'll have you both on as a guest of mine.
Great. Right? Looking forward to it, brother. All right, everybody.
Again.
We got to... We got to fly up out of here. Everybody, you've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table. It's your platform to come up here and say what you need to say. Don't forget to get the Shout It From the Mountains out so that your voice can be heard. You're more powerful than you can possibly imagine. It's just now's the time that you need to pick up that deal and run with it. So with that said, peace and love, everybody, and take care. See you next time.
Ma'am, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you ma'am.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh. Come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway! Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about! Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot! Camelot! Camelot!
It's only a model.
Shh!
Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to... Camelot!
We're Knights of the Round Table, we dance whenever we're able. We do routines, we call the scenes, we put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam art. We're Knights of the Round Table, our shows are more mid-table. So many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're off from bad in Camelot, we sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
On second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.